Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
You ever seen that show Cops? Well, I was watching it one time and there was this cop on. He was talking about this gunfight he had in the hallway with this guy, right? And he just unloaded on this guy and nothing happened. He didn't hit nothing. Okay, it was just him and this guy. I mean, you know, it's freaky, but it happens.
Look, you want to play blind man, go walk with a shepherd. But me, my eyes are wide.
Does that mean?
I mean, that's it for me. From here on in, you consider my ass retired.
Jesus Christ.
Don't blaspheme.
God damn it.
I said don't do that.
Hey, you know, you're freaking out on us.
Look, I'm telling Marcellus today. I'm through.
But why don't you tell him at the same time why?
Don't worry, I will.
Yeah, and I'll bet you $10,000 he lasts his ass off.
I don't give a damn if he does.
Marvin, what do you make of all this?
Man, I don't even have an opinion.
Well, you gotta have an opinion. I mean, do you think that God came down from heaven and stopped it?
Oh, what the f*** is happening?
Oh, man. Oh, man, I shot Marvin in the face.
Why the f*** did you do that?
Well, I didn't mean to do it. It was an accident.
Oh, man, I see some crazy-ass s*** in my time, but this...
Chill out, man. I told you it was an accident. You went over a bump or something.
Hey, the car ain't hit no motherfucking bump.
Hey, look, man, I didn't mean to shoot the son of a bitch. The gun went off. I don't know why.
Well, look at this mess, man. We're on a city street in broad daylight here.
Believe it, man.
Well, believe it now, motherfucker. We gotta get this car off the road. You know, cops tend to notice like you're driving a
just
car.
Just take it to a friendly place, that's all.
This is the Valley, Vincent. Marcellus ain't got no friendly places in the Valley.
Well, you'll sit my f***ing down, man.
It is 19 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of August of the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along and making it part of your listening day. Live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, the home of quality. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us today. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. If you'd like to be part of today's show via the telephone, 503-505-6964. I just got an email about something that says, Rick, I'm emailing you about this because Dawn never answers her email. At the same time, I swear to Christ, at the same time, Dawn got an email that said, Dawn, I'm emailing you about this because Rick never answers his email. So I'm wondering if that's a guy playing both sides against the middle.
Maybe.
If it's sort of a, you know, like when you divide and conquer with your parents kind of a thing. Have you sneezed yet?
No. I think maybe I will not be sneezing. I think I managed to head it off.
You got a little, you sound a little congested today.
I am, a little bit. I've got a little bit of a sniffy, sneezy kind of something in the back of my throat thing going on.
Is it an ailment of some kind?
It's allergies. It's just some kind of an allergy thing.
All right. You know, can I just say this about that? I wasn't even going to talk about it, except that, so my wife, who's a much better person than I am in like every conceivable way, she bicycled to work and then bicycled home again last night. And somewhere between leaving work and getting home, she bicycled right through some cloud of something she's allergic to. I don't know what the hell it is. She bicycled through something that she should not have. And so she got home at like 8 o'clock, and she went to bed at around, I don't know, like 10:30. And so she spent 2.5 hours in the living room sneezing. And just sneezing up a storm. And the thing about my wife is, she will never sneeze ever just once. She sneezes multiple times, always. There is never just one sneeze. We've tried various sort of methods, like the you know, like you would do with somebody who's hiccuping, you know, where you startle them, or you sort of just, you know, where you just give her a good smack. But she'll sneeze once, but then it's like you're just sitting there bracing because she's a now that she's not a delicate flower and all, but she's kind of a loud sneezer.
I am too. I'm a cartoon sneezer. I go achoo, just really. I actually say achoo. I sneeze very loudly,
and
so.
It sort of it echoes and ricochets everywhere.
Yeah.
And so that's her thing. You know, the thing about her sneezes, her sneeze trails off. She does, you know, the sneeze, and then it goes, you know, and it just sort of, you know, like you're sledding down a hill, or you're blowing that flugelhorn thing in the, you know, in Switzerland or whatever that thing is.
You ever known people who like sneeze like a cat? They do that thing where they just kind of go.
Yeah.
And that's it. This little... And then you're like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, it was a sneeze.
Oh, I sneezed. No, you didn't.
Doesn't sound like a sneeze. When I was in seventh grade, my seventh grade teacher, who was this creepy nun, she had this this sneeze that was itself kind of creepy because, again, it was sort of cat-like, where she would sneeze, and it was almost like she just sort of exhaled sort of softly, like sort of a, you know, or like a, you know, what's that? And she goes, oh, I was just sneezing. This is very weird. Anyway, so Lara just sat in the living room and just sneezed for like 2.5 hours last night. Aww. And I'm sitting in my office, which is adjacent to our living room, and I'm writing. And it's one of those things that shouldn't irritate me, but it sort of does because I notice it. And then it's like every time she sneezes, it just irritates me more. And which is typically a thing that only happens in the morning, right? Like when you get out of, like if you're a nighttime person and you wake up in the morning and you share the house with a morning person. And they're all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and watching television and making toast. And, you know, they burn the toast, so they got to scrape it with a knife. And you're in the room going, I will pull out your eyes. I swear to God, I will kill you with a melon baller. Stop it. So that's where the sneezing was. So I went out and I said, like, you know, we've got allergy medication. And she's like, no, 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 because if I take it, I'll be awake. Because we don't have any of the drowsy stuff. All we have is the non-drowsy. So then it was, and there really is no point to this story except to say that, and then it's one of those things where you're bracing yourself, waiting for the next sneeze to happen. So you let me know, because I've got allergy medication.
Well, when springtime first hit, and I learned last year was the first springtime summer I lived in my apartment complex, and discovered that when we moved in the winter, of course, I had no idea that when the warm weather came, so would the rolling snowdrifts of cottonwood.
Yeah.
And so last summer, I was just miserable for like a couple of months. There were just piles of this in the gutter. Like, you could make snowmen with this stuff. There was so much of it. And so, so this year, then my doctor had suggested Claritin, and the Claritin did nothing. So this year, somebody suggested Zyrtec. So I started taking the generic Zyrtec and took one every day. And it was brilliant.
Yeah.
I didn't have any sneezing.
Awesome.
Nothing. It was just awesome. But yeah, and then so, you know, cottonwood season was over. So I stopped taking it. And now today I'm having one of those like kind of days. So
lucky.
So maybe
me.
I should start taking it again.
That's fantastic.
What kind of medicine do you have over there? Is it the kind that will just make me loopy? Because Benadryl just makes me
well, it doesn't drug you up. It's not the dopey kind.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have the whatever Benadryl has, which is like diphenhydramine or something. It doesn't have that.
Okay.
You know, it's the kind that says like keeps you awake for 12 hours, or you know, or at least doesn't put you to sleep. That you can drive with it. That it's not you know, you can drive with it. The man won't hit you for driving under the intoxicating effects of a chemical. All right, it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on today, we're going to have Anna Griffin from The Oregonian. She'll be paying us a visit. Anna Griffin, columnist for The Oregonian, will be in the studio with us. We'll also have the top five songs from October 20th. 1973, which we had fully intended to get to yesterday, but then Dan Hanica was here, and it just the book conversation has just raged out of control, so we didn't really get to that. So we're going to get to it today. Top five songs from October 20th, 1973. Also, watches on the way today. Clown watch, taser watch, cannibal watch. All of those coming up. And let's see, what else? Oh, and it's just and a big pile of... And I got a bunch of emails that have sort of been coming in and stacking up. So I'm going to try to get to... I'm going to try to get to all of these... It is coming out of every nook and cranny in the studio now. Plus, Don Taylor is tracking the following stories for you on this Thursday. Don Taylor, what news are you following for the good people of Portland?
A man is arrested on 45 counts of sex abuse. A tiger deputy gets a laser in the eye. And a pregnant woman fails in her attempt to rob a fast food establishment.
Okay, so laser in the eye. So that's one of the things we got to file away to talk about at some point during today's program. Because we raised this issue during Legion of News. But, you know, but that's just a show where things move a lot faster and we get a timeline and, you know, and it's like they kick us out after an hour. Not like this program where we can just, you know what this program is? This is like free-range talk radio. You know, where we're just fed the finest of grasses and grazing under an open blue sky. And Sam Elliott comes by every now and again and pats us on the rump. And then he moves along. And then we're free to live a life of religious fulfillment. And yes?
And our flesh is a...
tasty.
Is a tasty... is tasty and colored orange from the grains we... No, okay, I got nothing.
And we're modeled with delectable fats. All throughout us. Anyway, so last hour we brought up this whole business of lasers. Because a guy was talking about like a sheriff deputy or somebody. He was talking about this thing where he'd had a laser shined into his eye by persons unknown. He was driving along and some guy somewhere aimed a laser and it hit his face. And he claimed that he felt it heating his face up, which makes it seem like it's one of those new non-lethal weapons the LAPD is always unveiling. One of those, like, Ed 209 things that'll just track you down if you're a protester and just burn your flesh or whatever. Yeah. But, like, in a peaceful way. And so then that led to this whole discussion about lasers and what kind of lasers are dangerous and what kind of lasers aren't. And is it gold lasers or green lasers or the polka dot lasers? So we got to figure that out at some point during today's show. So we'll get to that as well. Let's see. Let me just do this so I don't get too terribly behind with my email. I'm just going to read like two of these right out of the gate. Then we'll go to the news desk, and then we'll talk to Anna Griffin from the Oregonian and so forth. You got that look on your face like you're about to say something.
Well, you did want to discuss that whole question you wanted to ask me thing before Anna Griffin came in.
I know, but it's like if we do it now, it's just going to be... I don't, okay, here's... All right, let me just... Between you and I.
Okay.
Hopefully she's not listening. You don't want to... Here's the thing about this. Because you don't want to subject... Not that she's a total stranger. If anybody's watched Outlook Portland, you've seen that she's been on Outlook Portland several times. And she and I get along. We get along well, and it's one of those things where she just hasn't been on this show before. So it's her time here now. Outlook Portland, that's a show that I host, as is this. But just as Legion of News and the Rick Emerson Show are similar, but not really the same. Outlook Portland and the Rick Emerson Show, similar in the sense that it's me talking to somebody. Not really the same. That's a more reserved show in some ways. So when someone is paying their first visit to the studios or the radio program, you don't want to hit them full force with ass talk because then it's just then it can be awkward. So here's my question.
Okay.
Just between us. Okay. Between us girls, don't. So we were talking to Dan Hanico about this yesterday, and the Brett Favre story that you had where he was emailing or texting photos of his penis to a journalist. And we had this discussion about guys and the male belief that women find nothing sexier than when they see a tumescent male organ, especially if it's in the Craigslist ads or something like, hey, look at my junk. And it works. You know, and women are going to say, oh, my God, I can't. I am undressing now as I read. Get over here this instant. And so I was thinking, well, why is that? And you said it's because, well, men are visual, in a way that women maybe aren't as it regards sexuality. And so men say, well, if I was a guy, I'd want to see some body parts. So that's what I'm going to show a woman. And then that led to a discussion of what body parts women do wish to see. And you said it was sort of upper arms, like a bicep thing.
For me personally, yeah.
So if you see a guy now you're talking like a guy who is sort of chiseled or just a guy who is sort of toned?
Just toned. I like a well-formed upper arm. Part of it, I think it comes from the fact that I came of age in Southern California and was around a lot of surfers and swimmers.
Yeah, like skateboarding guys who are all sort of lithe and whatnot. But then you noted that a lot of women seem to favor, and I, working at and next to any number of country stations would seem to bear this out as a truth, that women seem to favor, a lot of them, seem to favor the male backside.
Yeah.
And I cannot tell you the number of country stations I've worked at where it's like you'll be doing some remote, for like your country audience, and just a bunch of just acid wash rubes would show up. And half the women who listened to a country station would all have some bumper sticker or a license plate frame that said, Wrangler butts drive me nuts. Which, anyway, leaving aside the fact that those women are almost entirely responsible for the state of our nation.
I am a woman, though, who does not look at men's butts.
But see, here's my question, though. I don't understand, from an evolutionary point of view, why that would be the case. I can explain the male attraction to most female body parts in terms of like an evolutionary thing, or it's like an unconscious selection of one's genetic mate, to have children. Because a lot of times those things are indicators of, or at least they are believed to be indicators of maybe health or fertility or something. I don't get the whole thing with chicks being into a guy's ass. There seems to be no evolutionary reason for that.
I don't either. All I can think, just off the top of my head, is that the way most men dress, that's really one of the few things that you can get a good look at. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I.
So you think maybe it's an indicator of overall physical health as contrasted with other areas of the body that are visible?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, men wear pants. That's the thing, is women can wear pants or skirts or any of a number of things.
Right.
Men wear pants. So therefore, a man's butt is pretty much always going to be available for perusal. So therefore, it has become some sort of, I guess, indicator, much, I guess, it's a similar way that all, that pretty much all women, almost all women have breasts.
But if that were the case,
I don't know.
But men wear shirts, and you'd say that you could just, you could easily use the arms. I'm not talking about a personal preference.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, you could use the arms to judge whether or not a man is generally in good health or not.
Maybe
there's no answer. Maybe there's one of those things science hasn't understood. See, this is what we need to get those lab rats studied.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I mean, I remember distinctly the first time I had I was with some women. And someone made a comment about a guy's package. And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And she had to explain to me the concept of the package.
Yeah, the package. Yeah.
And I was like, really? You're actually like looking at guys and looking at... Because I... Okay.
She says with an expression that indicates some kind of horror.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't... That's just not how I think. You know, I meet someone and I look at their face. You know, and if a man has really nice eyes... And a really nice smile. I know that. If he's got really nice, the upper arms, I am a thing. I've got a nose fetish. I'm not looking at guys' butts.
You got a nose fetish?
Yes, I have. When
you say a fetish, what does that mean exactly
in
this context?
I mean, I have always...
You're partial to men with...
I have always been extremely attracted to men with big noses, to the point where, you know how you have close personal friends and everyone knows... Girls, anyway. Everyone knows what somebody else's taste is.
Right.
So you see somebody who's somebody's type, and they go, hey, you know. And with me, it was if somebody saw, like, somebody with a big nose. They go, Don, look, you know. And the thing is, I didn't really realize it was as extreme as it was until I was working at a newspaper, and we had this regional ad guy come in, and he was a dead ringer for David Duchovny. And he had the Duchovny nose.
He has a prominent nose.
And as soon as I saw the guy, I was just in love. I would have just humped his leg. It was pathetic. And I hadn't spoken a word to him. And I realized, oh my God, the nose thing really does, it has reached like a fetishistic kind of a level. You know, so
what if he just offered to let you lick his nose? The outside.
I might have.
Oh, awesome.
I don't know.
The best thing there, you know who would appreciate that is David Duchovny himself. And not just in his Red Shoe Diaries persona either. All right, awesome.
Thomas Gill tells us that that butts indicate the ability to run during a hunt, whereas arms would be the ability to throw spears or handle a gun.
Now, see, I could get that. See, I could almost get that because that's the whole thing with the female buttocks and the whole idea of the, you know, those are breeding hips, as a biology professor of mine once said to a student. All right, well, fair enough. All right. Let's see here. Let me just read a couple of these right off, just from in no particular order. Email number one. I was finishing up... Okay, I'm just going to read this as it's written. I was finishing up my purchase at the market today, and the guy in back of me puts beer on the conveyor belt. His wife / baby mama is across from us in line at the Bank of America kiosk. She yells at him, "Hey, honey, we have no cable. We have no cable." I don't think he was getting the subtle hint. There you go. Email number one. It's a Portland slice of life. Let's see.
She was telling him not to buy milk because they don't have cable?
Not to buy beer because they have no cable and one must have priorities.
Oh, okay.
So apparently he was pulling for the alcohol part of the equation. She was rooting for the television part of the equation. All right. Well, we'll get to the news. We'll take a break on the other side of some news. Talk to Anna Griffin from The Oregonian and so forth. Later on today, Taser Watch, Clown Watch, Cannibal Watch, top five songs from October 20th, 1973. That is all on the way. Without further ado, however, let's make room for the news.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Clackamas County deputies have arrested a man accused of sexually abusing a 7-year-old girl, marrying the child's mother, and then running off to California. Don Smock Jr., 45, was wanted on 45 counts of sex abuse-related charges, deputies said. After his photo was shown on Fox 12's 4 o'clock news, deputies said they located him after receiving a tip from a television viewer. A grand jury indicted Smock on charges last month. Within 2 hours of the hearing, he secretly married the victim's mother in Colton, Oregon. The couple spent their honeymoon in a Portland hotel with the girl, and then Smock fled to California.
For the love of God.
Investigators said the child's mother hasn't been cooperative in the case, and deputies arrested her on Tuesday.
All right, seriously, I think I speak for everybody right now when I say this is what that taser is made for. You cooperate with the business end of this, whore. Jesus, for the love of Christ, are you kidding me?
No.
He's a good man. You don't know him like I know him. Jesus. All right, let's do one that doesn't fill me with sickening revulsion for all humanity.
Well, I can't promise anything.
Damn you. All right, fine.
A drunken pregnant lacrosse woman
is
accused of trying to rob a Southside fast food restaurant for drug money late Tuesday, but failed when her weapon became jammed in her shorts.
Well done.
A Taco John's cashier told investigators a heavyset woman wearing an oversized floral shirt and shorts approached the counter at about 10:40 p.m. and demanded cash. "I want a soft shell, and this is a stick-up," she said.
In that order.
"Give me all your money." The woman tried pulling a hammer from her shorts pocket, but could not remove the weapon after tugging on the handle. The cashier pressed the restaurant's panic button and called 911.
Oh, man.
The suspect fled without any money.
That's fantastic.
Julie Bailey, 38, was arrested a few minutes later with a wooden hammer in her hand after a short foot pursuit.
A wooden hammer.
Well, she is facing charges of attempted armed robbery and obstructing officers.
That is, that's a wonderful story right there. See, and I didn't necessarily know that you'd be able to make good on your attempt to bring a smile to my face. So she ordered a taco first. That was like the first order of business, and a soft shell taco at that.
Right.
And then the second order.
You don't want to be hampered by the hard shell when you're trying to flee with your money.
No, but you do have to have the appropriate amount of protein, and you got a carb load to some degree. It's like when you're running a marathon. And then the second order of business was that I'm robbing you, and it's with a wooden hammer that I can't get out of my pants. And then she actually has to flee after repeatedly, quote, tugging on the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And where I come from, tugging on the wooden hammer means something else altogether, but, you know.
And then the last line of the story, officers recovered pink and white slippers believed used during the crime near 10th and Jackson Streets.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Dawn Taylor.
She lost her slippers.
I appreciate that. Here's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Two Victorville, California women have been charged with misdemeanors for a fight that led to a brawl during a kindergarten graduation ceremony. San Bernardino County investigators say the women were arguing and it got physical in a field near the June ceremony at Puesta del Sol Elementary in Victorville. Several men got involved and the incident turned into a brawl, forcing school officials to place the school on lockdown until deputies sorted things out.
And these were all, how old were the kids?
Kindergarten.
So they were kids.
These are the parents of kindergartners at a kindergarten graduation ceremony.
Oh, so it wasn't even just like the kids. So it wasn't actually the kids themselves. This
is
like one of those softball games where it's like the kids are fine and the parents go nuts.
Yes.
What was the sparking incident? What was the?
They don't really say. Their misdemeanor charges have been filed against 31-year-old Quayona Burt and 29-year-old Marina Ruth Vargas. The two women started fighting, and then a bunch of men got involved, and it turned into a parental brawl.
That's fantastic. I will guarantee you that the women were fighting over a man, because that seems to be
It could have been their kids, too. Somebody might have said that their other... It's too bad your kid just isn't as smart as my kid. I will punch you! I will battle you!
Your child's illegible scrolls are not quite as wonderful as my child's illegible scrolls. I just remember every single time that I was in high school and there would be some, you know, like a dust-up that would happen between girls, and this is like high school-age girls. It was, and this is back before there was the instant technology that we have today. I can only imagine what, I can't even fathom what it's like to be a high school kid at this point. It must be, as much as high school is sort of like, I think it's the best of times, worst of times. It's not even that it's like, it's not even that high school is bad as such. It's like an 85-15 ratio. I mean, there are a few moments of things that happen, not in high school necessarily, but when you are an adolescent. There are a few rites of passage or things you do for the first time or just steps you take in your life that are pretty great. It's just that every one of those is countered by like 75 things that make you want to kill yourself. So I don't even know what it's like to be a high school kid now. It's probably way worse than it was just because it seems like it seems like anything you might have done that was enjoyable at all has been sort of legislated out of existence now by a hyper-responsive public. But when I was in high school and some girls had started punching it out in the parking lot, word would immediately spread through the entire student population. I don't even know how. It was just like somehow it would like be, skywritten over the high school. You know, Michelle and Robin are punching each other in the face over in the jock lot. Let's go over there. And everybody would go over and you would just, you'd sit down on a curb or lean up against a building or whatever it is you're doing and just watch these girls just repeatedly beat each other in the face because girls are mean, man.
Chick fights were always like 300 times more vicious than guy fights.
Well, because guys have a sort of, depending on who you are, guys typically have a little bit of an understood honor code. You know that you're not kneeing a guy in the junk. You're not going to bite the guy. Why? Because that's a girly thing. That's how women fight.
Women, though, they roll around and they pull hair and they scratch and bite each other.
It's a lot of like, and it's a. And I saw this fight where it's like a girl. Seriously, she gave a bit of what we used to call the second word of the phrase was twister, where she just went right in and grabbed it. You know, right on the nipple, and then just gave it just a big hork, you know, and it was just and.
Now I don't know where you went to school, but it's like where I went to school. There was also this sort of class, strata.
Yeah.
It was only like really trashy girls that fought.
Oh, always. No, it was girls who were wearing flannel, and not because it was popular or trendy at the time, just because that's
the girls who like went out during recess, like way out in the field, and smoked cigarettes with the really skanky boys.
It was a lot of girls who had sort of stringy hair, what we might call prominent makeup, a little bit of flannel, and had a dad they called Jerry, and like those are the girls that fought. And it always started the same way. It always started over a guy, and it always ended with the girls both scratched, bruised, bleeding, crying, holding each other, and then just something going, he's not worth it. Let's not let him, get between us again. And then they would go off and get high somewhere, So and then it's like the whole cycle would repeat itself the next week. Good times they were. Mm. All right, let's do. We'll do like two more here, and we'll take a break. Yes.
Let's do our clown watch.
Yeah, I was just looking at the watches actually, and thinking which of these are the most horrifying, and let's get it done now. I think that would be clown. You're right. Let me just find the clown watch theme here. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is Thursday. This is your clown watch. Did I ever play you the second place clown watch? The thing we almost used.
No.
I'll find it. I'll dig it up and play it maybe later on today. Well, we very nearly didn't go with this. It was neck and neck. We had the audience vote on it. All right. Here's your clown watch for Thursday.
At 2 p.m. yesterday at City Hall in Saratoga Springs, New York, Mayor Scott Johnson was joined by clowns from Schenectady-based Electric City Clown Alley to deliver a proclamation recognizing the first week of August as International Clown Week.
This is where?
This was in Sarasota Springs, New York.
Now, why was International Clown Week being celebrated in Sarasota Springs, New York? Is it a notable place in clown history? Today in clown history. Is that where the seltzer bottle was invented or something? Or where the first pair of shoes was made in a size that was comically large and they decided to keep going with it?
It's the first place where they crammed too many clowns into a small Volkswagen Bug successfully.
But that was part of a labor dispute that eventually ended in a fire.
There's a bronze VW Bug in front of City Hall with clowns pouring out of it.
Oh, my God! We should do some how many clowns can we stuff into a Volkswagen contest downtown, like for charity or something. You know, like how many co-eds can you stuff into a phone booth thing? We ought to
that
do
that.
That
would not involve me actually being around the clowns, would it?
I don't know. I mean, has nobody ever done this? Has nobody done how many clowns can you stuff into
I don't know.
It seems like that's a thing it's a natural. It's a thing we ought to do.
Someone in the text box says the carousel was invented in Binghamton, New York.
Well, if only that had anything to do with the story that we were talking about, or Sarasota. I don't mean to be unduly harsh about it. The cheetah's the fastest animal on earth.
Well, Teresa Stevens, I guess that's her clown name. A Saratoga Springs resident who has been clowning since 1981 says...
And killing since 1982.
Clowns do a lot for the world in general. Stevens was voted 2008 Clown of the Year by the Schenectady-based group. 2010 Clown of the Year, Marie Mischief Beck. 2007 recipient, Reverend Richard Smoothie Reynolds. And Paul Fuddy-Duddy Kleinberger, former president of Clowns of America International, were also in attendance.
All right, there you go. There's your clown watch for Thursday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It warms my heart. I gotta make a note to myself to make this a downloadable. Much as I don't typically put the watches up as downloadable things, a lot of them you feel like sort of proprietary about, although I guess it would have come in handy weeks ago when I'd lost all of them. I'm at the very least, I'm going to post this one in the archive so it's a downloadable file.
But just people do ask for it.
They ask for it for the sole purpose of terrifying other human beings. And how can I not assist with that? How can I not enable my brother in his quest? Well, there you go. There's your... I like how it goes up. Like they raise it a step there at the end, key-wise. That's your Clown Watch for Thursday. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
A cell phone store manager in South Florida dissuaded an armed...
South where?
Florida.
Oh, damn it. That's my fail. Never mind.
Wait.
Jesus, it can't... All right,
there we go. Cell phone store manager in South Florida...
I didn't even deserve that one.
...dissuaded an armed man from robbing the store by telling him Jesus wouldn't approve. Instead of panicking when the suspect pulled a weapon, Nayara Gonsalves started talking with him. He was jobless, and the 20-year-old Christian offered to connect him with friends who could help him find work. She said she believed the man when he said he attended church and wasn't a bad person. She told him the answer to his financial problems wasn't in the cash register. Then the clerk nudged him with a little sin of her own. She said the store would hold her responsible for any cash he stole. She said, "I just wanted to remind him that he knew better."
All right. Yeah, being in Florida, he almost certainly... Here's the thing. He probably didn't know better as such, but he probably had I would say, a finite cranial capacity, being a resident of that fine state. So there you go. There's another thing for you. All right. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy. Coming up later on, we will have today's top five. Top five songs from October 20th, 1973, one of which proved very difficult to find, by the way, but I was able to do it. I adapted, I overcame, I persevered, I improvised, and I have, in fact, found the appropriate track. So it really was all for the best that we did it today as opposed to yesterday. So top five songs from October 20th, 1973. Also, Taser Watch on the way, Cannibal Watch on the way, and we come back, we'll talk to Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program right here on the Emerson News Network. Stay right there. Back after this.
Never knew my heart.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us today. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. There's something upon your countenance that indicates that there's a joke being told to which I am not privy, Dawn Taylor.
One of our listeners in the text box shares, regarding stuffing clowns in a clown car,
yeah.
Didn't a bunch of clowns suffocate during one of these attempts?
I don't believe so.
Maybe that's why they don't do it anymore.
What do you mean during one of the, during what attempt?
Stuffing as many cars.
Is there
clowns
a known?
In a car. I don't know because the
is there a known clown stuffing incident of which I was not aware?
I don't know because the actual clown coming out of a car gag I thought was that they're actually going in one door and coming back out the other.
So,
because of my hatred and loathing and fear of clowns, I just like the idea of a clown full of cars just suffocating.
Let me just back up for one second. So so before with Rick, we were talking about how it's international. It's not just national, and not just in this hemisphere. It is in fact international. It is worldwide clown
week.
All right.
First week of August.
And so I was just noting that we ought to have some sort of a, which is really just a way to expose you to that which you fear, sort of in a Nietzschean way, so that you can overcome it. So that we ought to have something where we stuff clowns into a car. But the claim was then made that there was some known incident in the past in which clowns were stuffed into a vehicle, and they then suffocated and perished.
That's what this fellow is purporting, yes.
I wonder if it was never mind. All right, so we'll move on. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Still to come today, we have our Taser Watch, our Cannibal Watch. We have the top five songs from October 20th, 1973. That'll be on the way here in just a short order. And so forth. Dawn Taylor is tracking stories, including the following for you on this Thursday afternoon.
A Tiger deputy gets a laser in the eye. An Amtrak train hit two vehicles on one trip. And a monster crocodile is stalking Australia.
All right. Awesome. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program. If you've watched Outlook Portland, you've seen Anna Griffin on the show with me several times, where she sort of listens to my long, rambling questions with a look of patient indulgence before giving me an answer that is really far more intelligent than I deserve. She writes a twice-weekly column for the Oregonian's Metro section on news and life in Portland and Multnomah County. Hello, Anna Griffin. How are you?
What's nice about this is I don't have to give you the patient look. I can just roll my eyes at you.
You could just sort of smugly look at the floor and wonder what you could be doing with your time that's better serving to all of us.
I'm just thinking about monster alligators right now.
Before we do anything else, I have to say that so when you come into the when you come to the studio here, when we used to work at CBS, back in the golden days, when we were at CBS, we would always just tell people we had this thing we called the Art Alexakis green room. And that was really just the kitchen. Because we didn't really have a green room as such, but there was a kitchen in which was hung a picture of Everclear. And he would just sort of sit and stare lovingly at sometimes, like if he was ever sort of there, which he seemed to be all the time, not unlike Carl Weathers in Arrested Development.
Well, where else does he have to be?
Nowhere. Maybe a government agency of some kind. He provided this photo of himself to be in the kitchen. So we called it the Art Alexakis screen room, which we went out on our own and we decided to get our own place. One of our big goals was to find an office space here that actually had two adjoining offices so that there would be an actual green room or a place for people to come in and just sort of sit while they were waiting to come on the show or whatever. But we ended up not doing that. We ended up getting a place where we have yet another kitchen. And so I walk in there, and it's the thing where you don't really see something with fresh eyes until you see it with someone else in the room. And I realized that all of the recycle bins in the kitchen are filled with either Viso bottles or malt liquor containers, or in fact a Crown Royal bottle.
There was some RC in there too, I think.
Yeah. I guess that's us in a nutshell.
There's some pickles and creamer in the refrigerator, just in case you're hungry.
It's like condiments only. Anyway, you should note, by the way, that the Colt 45 bottles in there are awesome because Billy Dee Williams is on the side. I swear to God. Like 25 years after the fact, Lando Calrissian is in fact still on the side of the Colt 45 bottles. So it's a classic.
If they dressed him like Lando, my son would try to buy that.
Well, you find a good thing. If you find a steady income, one needs to stick with it. That's my
I would like
point.
To assure you, though, that none of the malt liquor bottles actually come from this radio program.
No, that's that is a separate program that, you know, we, it's a sort
can
of
can I go
yin
on that
yang.
Show later?
Yes. I would say that by about 40 or 50 minutes into the show, you could probably just appear there and they wouldn't notice. That's just my guess. Anyway, so thank you for joining us. Before we do anything else, Don, let's just we'll go back to the news desk, and we will catch up on today's headlines, and then we'll talk to Anna Griffin and find out what is going on in the world of ours. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, at the news desk, it is
and
Don
now,
Taylor
from the news desk. This is Don Taylor.
I lost the second page of my crocodile story.
The best part is how you're here actually 3 hours before the show starts every day.
Yeah.
And by the time I actually play the news sounder indicating that your segment's about to begin, it is as though like a Hearst paper mill has exploded in your vicinity.
The recycling bins in the kitchen are more organized than this.
Yeah. Let's do this one. Washington County Sheriff's Office has asked for the public's help a Wednesday after a deputy was injured when someone shined a laser into his eye last month. Glenn Howard, a Washington County Sheriff's deputy, was sitting in his patrol car July 17th after wrapping up an unrelated police call in the Riverwood Heights apartment complex. He was preparing to leave when he noticed a green laser shining in his car and hitting him in the face. Howard, who worried that the laser may have come from a device mounted on a gun, quickly opened his door, left the car, and took cover to defend himself. He said the laser followed him and continued to shine in his face. As I did that, the laser tracked me and made contact with my left eye for 2 to 3 seconds, he said, for long enough that I could feel a mild burn. He was able to see the laser come from the direction of Building N at the apartment complex, about 75 to 100 yards away from him. He also noticed the person aiming the laser was moving, by the way the light moved quickly out of the area.
The idea that it was coming from an apartment building across the way is something I instinctively believe, though, because I would say that perhaps 98% of the lasers, the handheld lasers in this country, were purchased either at the checkout section of a Winco or like at a Spencer's Gifts by someone who was buying a bong with skulls on the side of it and maybe a Ron Mexico jersey.
Well, I have been advised by people far more intelligent than me in the text boxes that the green lasers actually cost a lot of money and they have a very high wavelength. They have a lot of power.
Well, this was our discussion. It was his claim that he could feel the laser actually heating his skin.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem like that's the sort of kind – that's not the thing you're buying like at Walgreens to amuse your dog with or something.
No.
That seems like an actual – that's like a Skynet laser. That's a thing that you want to probably be avoiding at all costs.
Well, it did some damage to his eye, and they don't know how extensive yet. But,
all right. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. Just by way of a an introduction, you cover stuff for Portland and for Multnomah County and whatever, and you have a you know, the sort of, you know, everything that sort of falls under the purview of that. I mean, you're not just assigned to one kind of story.
You sound like my editor. You write about stuff, right?
It is an umbrella. It is everything under the aegis of Portland life and happenings. But the really great thing about it is that it's done with this. I told Dawn that you had a charming, wry, barely restrained hostility sometimes when you wrote, which is sort of great, which is one of the best things about your columns, where it's like it's like the most polite kind of scorn that you sometimes have for great sections of humanity, which is a thing I identify with.
I do walk around and frequently tell my spouse I hate everyone.
Is that just, you know, where you just come home from a day at the newspaper and you just think to yourself, my God, I'm surrounded by fools.
Everybody.
We had this story earlier today about there was an abduction that happened. I think it was yesterday or this morning. There was another child that had been abducted. You wrote a lot and have written a lot about the Kyron Horman thing. And we had talked about press conferences and the fact that they kind of seem to be ongoing. I'm never quite clear about who calls all the press conferences. In other words, they just sort of seem to happen. Is it a thing where the cops have to call one because they got to look like they're doing something, or the parents call one because they want to look like they care? Not that they don't, but, you know, they have to make the public appearance of that.
Well, if you remember, in the first couple weeks after Kyron Horman went missing, nobody was saying anything. And it was very hard to get information out of the sheriff's office, and the parents weren't really talking. And so I think they got badgered enough for that with people going, what's going on? Do you guys just not know anything? That they started feeling as if they had to hold regular news conferences. Now what you have is a situation where People Magazine's interested in the story, and the National Enquirer's interested in the story, and Dateline, and ABC, and Oprah apparently has talked to the family. And so I think it's now a mix of let's keep the kid's name in the public eye, but I also think, and here I'm going to sound like, I hate everybody. I think there's a certain, not enjoyment, because kids are missing. So they're, you know, your child is missing, you're not enjoying that. But I think there is a certain something about standing up and talking in front of reporters who take down every word you say that can be a little bit intoxicating.
It becomes sort of a, what is it, the Munchausen thing? Is that what it's called, Don? Or by proxy or whatever it is. You know, but it's like where people are nice to you because something horrible has happened. Which seems like it's got to be, that must be a little seductive in some way because how did you describe it? You said that the best part about being really sick is that no one expects anything from you.
Yes.
Is that how you...
Yeah, that I understood Munchausen syndrome when I had an operation because, you know, everyone's really nice to you and nobody expects you to actually answer the phone or go to work or do anything. It's like, but everything is focused on you.
After I had my daughter, I really did not want to ever leave the hospital. Like, I still think the maternity ward at Providence may be the happiest place on earth. Because people are constantly bringing you things, and you could order milkshakes if you want to, and they're all—it's all about you. And are you okay? And can we do anything for you? And oh, you poor baby. Like, yeah.
Was it ever explained how Terry Harmon? And there's a second part of that name that I always forget, but how she came up with like the $350,000 or whatever it was to pay for her lawyer?
That's a great question that has not been answered.
I mean, it seems like one of those things that would, you know, where like the if I just had $350,000 that came out of nowhere, there'd be a guy in a suit on my front porch, like asking me, from where that came.
This is the kind of story we don't see a lot in Portland. It's in my previous life when I worked in North Carolina, we talked a lot about, and this is, again, I hate everyone, white trash crime. And this falls, I mean, this is not to judge the particular players, but it feels a lot like a white trash crime. I mean, you have the female bodybuilders, and you have the white pickup truck that's mysteriously towed away, and you have various changing odd shades of hair color.
Getting the gardener to trying to get the gardener to kill your husband,
which is completely shades of that. Who was the TV the TV weather? She was the woman that did the weather, and she tried to get. They made a movie in it with Nicole Kidman and Matt Dillon to die for. Wasn't that based on a real thing?
Yeah.
She was some weather woman on television, and she tried to get some young hunk with whom she was having a torrid affair to off like her husband or somebody else or whatever. And it just. And it's like, you know, or it's like the Vili Falau kid, the Mary Kay Letourneau, where it's just, you know, it's like they all just came straight out of like a bowling alley or something, or like from a John Waters film, and they've just been beamed into our reality. I mean, it is the same thing.
And you do sort of wonder at the end of the day, when the Lifetime movie gets made, who is the good guy?
Yeah, well, that's the thing about the Kyron Harmon thing is it's like. As you know, like, in the meanwhile, you know, he is either safe and sound or not. You know, but regardless of where he is and how he is right now, it doesn't really seem like anything that's happening is really serving him in whatever way he needs to be served.
Breaking news: we're going to hold a news conference, and no, you may not ask questions.
Yeah, that's a thing where, as you said, they sort of stand up there and they just kind of they feel the warm, they bask in the warm glow of the lights, and then everybody kind of goes home content in the knowledge that they've done something. Let's talk about road construction and your analysis of the whole streetcar situation, which is let me ask you this: if we had to put money right now on whether once they're finished with the whole thing on MLK, they're going to move on to somewhere else and they're going to start tearing up another road to put in another tract of streetcar railing. What would you say is the likelihood of that?
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah, because we love streetcars. Politicians love streetcars. They're fun to play with. They're fun to plan with. They're one of the rare things that that you can actually control if you are a white guy, middle-aged guy in public office. You know, sit down and play with your trains. That's great. But have you tried driving around the east side of Portland recently?
Yes, I have. Every day, as a matter of fact. Well, it's like how downtown Portland just became impassable for like 2 years. I mean, just for what seemed like a tedious eternity. You just couldn't get anywhere.
But now it's worth it. You have a Max line out to Clackamas Town Center.
Because that's what we needed, is people from Clackamas just coming here all the time.
Where people keep getting mugged, apparently.
Day and night.
We just keep reading these stories about people getting mugged at Clackamas Town Center on the Max platform.
Well, now we can expand the mugging. You know, it's one of those things that we can... You know, before, it was isolated in certain small pockets of the community, like the Appalachians. It was just as... just as the Wasatch Mountains separated, the native peoples from the rest of the land, so the lack of a streetcar, separated some guy shuffling around in oversized pants, from the rest. But the train has linked us all together.
It's the American dream that we can all, no matter where we live, get panhandled.
Exactly. It's really what the Founding Fathers had in mind. I've got the deepest, darkest feeling about... I don't know why. It's just one of those, like, disturbance in the force feelings about answering the phone today. I don't know why. Hello, hi, Rick Emerson radio program, sir and madam, as the case may be. How can I help you on this Thursday?
Hey, Rick. I just wanted to, sad as it is, defend the Max to Clackamas just a little.
I'm sorry? You just wanted to? It was all just, like, pops and whistles there at the beginning.
I wanted to defend the Max to Clackamas.
Yes, okay.
Which is a bit sad, but... I mock the Green Line as much as anybody. It is kind of pointless at this point. But the same thing happened when they built, when they extended the Blue Line out to Hillsborough. People were like, nobody goes to Hillsborough. It's a pointless thing. And now I live in Hillsborough.
Well, is it? But, I mean, Hillsborough, at least there's a thing, if there's industry and there's companies and corporations or whatever. I mean, even Clackamas, you're just going to find an Olive Garden.
Well, yeah, but that's why you build a transit line. Not the only reason, but that's one of the reasons, is it brings... There's one of the difficulties about getting to Clackamas is that it's out of the way. So the theory, and I'm not saying... I don't even know how much stock to put into this theory, but the theory is that, yeah, Clackamas is kind of a nowhere town right now.
From what you've heard, but that's the rumor.
The theory is that... You can bring industry there by building a Max line, because people will go, oh, hey, people are riding the Max. I want to build my store, my small business of some sort, right next to the Max line.
Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, what say you about this outrageous theory?
I think Mayor Adams just explained that very well.
Well done.
He made a good point. The point of light rail, just like the point of, Max, streetcar, whatever, the point of the trains is not to get people from one place to another as quickly as possible. It is to give developers a sense of where development can go. They're putting in the streetcar not to move people around downtown faster. They're putting in a streetcar to spur development on the Central East Side, the same way that the streetcar spurred development in the Pearl District.
All right, thank you there. That's Andy. All right, and I am now obliged to...
Shiny, a slang term for great use in the television series Firefly and the movie Serenity.
Right, thank you. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. Still on the way, we have our Taser Watch, Cannibal Watch, and our top five today. Top five songs from October 20th, 1973. Let's come back to the news desk with Dawn Taylor.
A monster 21-foot crocodile had to be killed by locals in the remote territory of Borroloola in Australia, southeast of Darwin. It was massive, said a witness. There were three huge ones out there. One of them is still out there at the moment.
Are you telling me there was a 20-foot crocodile and it was actually in a place southeast of Darwin?
Yeah, Darwin, Australia.
No, Australia. I'm just saying it just works on a literal and figurative level.
Well, yes.
All right.
It's pretty well fed, said the fellow of the dead crocodile. It took two land cruisers to pull it out. They have one croc that's still out there. He should be getting to this size about now.
That's great. That's really comforting. Well, it's like that story we had in Florida was it 2 weeks ago, where the guy was just sitting there and he was like sitting on a wall or something, and a crocodile just kind of, he was sitting on a wall that sort of abutted or adjoined or a word like that, but it was right next to the water. And then the thing just came out of the water and sort of seized one of his hands and just kind of made off with it. And to his credit, he was actually able to dial 911 somehow and report that like his hand had just been taken off by a crocodile.
That's why rotary phones were a bad idea.
I mean, really, because then you're just dialing with your nose and it's a whole lot of unpleasantness.
Well, one of the locals said they used to get animal bones to feed to the crocodiles to keep them from feeding on their goats. He says, this one was getting too nasty and too close. It was attacking our cattle.
So this is a thing where you actually had to buy the crocodiles off by giving them parts of other animals.
Right.
As just sort of, so it's like you're paying the VIG to keep the guy from torching your store.
But when he got to like 21 feet in length, he said, ah, I'm just going after the cattle.
Yeah. Well, that's what
they went, well, we'll shoot it. We'll shoot it.
Well, that's like the whole thing. Well, that's the thing with every animal. I mean, we've noted that like when you see somebody, you see humans with that, what was that bear at the zoo in Germany? Newt? Nut? Whatever his name was. But he was like the tiny little polar bear that everybody thought was cute.
Yeah, Newt.
Oh, he's gnawing on my finger.
Knut.
Yeah, which is, just sort of a dry run for gnawing on your internal organs at some point when he becomes large enough. Let's see. Somebody says via email, says, Rick, I think you would be for the streetcar because then you will not have to spend all your time sitting in traffic. You could take the street. You know. Well, this is what we were saying the other day, where you take the bus and at least then it becomes somebody else's problem. Yeah. Dealing with traffic then becomes the problem of the guy who is driving the bus or in charge of the streetcar, and so you're not there surrounded by idiots who are blocking your way. And I guess there's something to be said for that. It just seems like the biggest problem with the streetcar is once you put it down, then everything has to be built near it because you can't move it. Like, it's not adjustable.
That's the whole point.
Is that part of their grand scheme?
That is part of the grand scheme. Make it sound more evil than that, though.
If I had, like, the Imperial March music maybe underneath this. Or some
it's not
sort
a scheme,
of a,
it's a plot.
Well, because, I get the idea that they don't want to just have a bunch of things that are just belching carbon monoxide into the atmosphere or whatever. Okay. But it seems like with the same amount of money, that the $600 million or whatever is going to cost, you could just use that to create some sort of a busing system that is not going to pollute the atmosphere and that is also adjustable to whatever route alterations you might need.
Tourists don't like buses. They think they're dirty.
See, and that is the whole thing, is that we equate streetcars with cities that are sort of bright and shiny and that, you know, it has like a San Francisco sort of elegance to it or whatever.
And people don't get the concept of riding the bus on a regular basis. I mean, that really is a bizarre Portland thing.
Is it because we equate the bus with being a grubby poor person and we equate the streetcar with being a sophisticate?
Oh, streetcars are European and buses are nasty.
Buses are for those people.
That's right. Those people ride the bus.
You know who I mean. Here's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Speaking of trains, an Amtrak train headed to St. Louis hit a second vehicle near Centerview, Missouri on Thursday morning, hours after it sliced a truck in half near Hamblin and Thompson Roads in Lee's Summit, Missouri. A passenger on board described the accidents. The first one, we didn't feel any sort of impact, said James Kirkpatrick. You just felt or heard some dirt or metal hit the side window of the car, and that was about it. Then you heard the brakes, and we stopped pretty quick. And the second one, you didn't feel anything or hail anything other than the brakes, so that's why we're all kind of surprised that it happened again.
I'm unclear about this. It hit two. So this is a train, and it
right.
hit two different cars in two different places.
Yeah, about 8:30 a.m., a train hit a truck in Lee's Summit, Missouri. The truck was sliced in half, and the driver was ejected. The bed of the truck was located about a mile down the track. The man had life-threatening injuries. He's one of those guys that was trying to race across the tracks, got hit by the truck. The passenger train hit a second vehicle on the tracks around 10:30 a.m.
I guess my questions would be, A, is the truck itself real flimsy, or is the train real impervious or something? Because it seems like that would do a fair amount of damage to the front of the train. Secondly, how is it that in the space, I mean, even in this country, as two people within the space of one day managed to get themselves onto some train tracks and then stay there, sort of unaware of the idea that maybe that's a bad place to be, or that that's going to work out poorly for you?
Maybe because it's Missouri?
I guess it's entirely possible. It's 503-505-6964. This is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Let's do our Cannibal Watch.
Here's your Cannibal Watch. This is, your Cannibal Watch for Thursday.
We have a fancy guest from the Oregonian, so let's do our Cannibal Watch.
Dawn and I had talked before, so Anna Griffin from the Oregonian is here, and we had talked before about what we were going to discuss today. I said, well, what are the big stories in Portland? And we kind of went back and forth about it, and I figured that we would just... For your first sort of experience here on the show, I figured that in lieu of coming up with some reverse engineering some topic specifically for you around you, we would just kind of throw you into what we normally do and just subject you to it full force and then decide if you were horrified, then so be it. But if you were somehow fine and decided to, you know, if you could roll with it, then you know, then that was there was no point in just soft soaping it.
You know, I was assuming canapes and fine wine and maybe discussion of today's economist, like we do at the Oregonian most of the time. And instead, I got malt liquor bottles that are empty.
I was
and
say,
cannibals.
I was going to say I'm not going to rule out that there might be a full cold 45 around here somewhere. Now it's going to be warm if
and,
that's the case.
And there is a fridge full of cheap beer.
I should
over
say
there.
There's
and
actually
feel free to have one if you like. And there's also, I believe, a bottle of somebody's homemade Kahlua in one of those satchels by the wall.
Yeah. You know,
this is a strange place.
It's we're a cosmopolitan people here. All right, here's your I say going into the Cannibal Watch. Here's your Cannibal Watch for Thursday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don Taylor with your Cannibal Watch for Thursday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. I will attend to your headphones here in just a second.
A Ukrainian computer programmer has been accused of gouging out his grandmother's eyeballs before eating her alive. Sergei Zmaryov, 26, allegedly carved 60-year-old Lydia's face with a shard of broken mirror while she was still conscious, according to The Sun. It is believed the man cut out his grandmother's tongue to stop her cries from help, and then ate it.
I should interject at this point that is, despite the name of this being Cannibal Watch, they're usually not this overtly horrible. So, well done, Don.
Thank you.
Well surveyed this morning.
Thank you.
And this is where?
This was in the Ukraine.
See, normally I would equate this sort of a thing with either Florida or Germany. That seems to be the two, those are the two locations on Earth that create, I would say, maybe 98% of our Cannibal Watches.
He also allegedly cut off her lips and ears. The woman died at the scene as a result of her injuries. All the time she was conscious and tried to escape, a police source told The Sun.
It doesn't seem like that's the sort of thing that could be alleged. It seems like your lips being removed is a binary state. That's a straight up or down. Right there.
Authorities believe it may have been a ritualistic killing by Mr. Zmaryov, who was known by neighbors as a religious zealot.
Really? Not as a quiet man who kept to himself mostly?
Police found Mr. Zmaryov dressed only in his underpants, holding a cross and chanting prayers.
Catholicism right there, isn't
awesome.
It?
Awesome, yeah.
Officers apparently had to fill the room with gas to sedate him before his arrest.
No. He is misapprehended the entire transubstantiation process. That is just, he's just not pursuing it correctly. I mean, I know it's the Ukraine where life is cheap and all, but I mean, fair enough.
Police Chief Olga Kondrashova,
who, just from the name alone, is somebody that you don't want to cross, because she will beat you into a fine powder in the back of a cell, and she will ignore your cries for help.
She would only confirm that a 26-year-old man had been arrested on suspicion of murder. She said, "I can add that this murder was committed with particular cruelty."
Yes. All right. Well, it seems like that goes without saying. All right. There you go. There's your Cannibal Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian is here. Still coming up tonight, we have today's Taser Watch. We also have your top five on the way. We'll do it on the top five songs from October 20th, 1973. At the news desk, this is Don Taylor. There's a whole behind-the-scenes thing happening here, by the way, with our guest headphones, which has sort of taken leave of the studio today. So actually, during the Cannibal Watch open and close just now, we were attempting to solve that problem. It's like the studio is sort of being parted out like an old Impala, piece by piece, because, first of all, for the last few days, we've been light a microphone. Then, for the replacement microphone, we actually now are missing the windscreen. And now a pair of headphones is missing. So I'm not saying that someone here in the studio has a meth problem and is slowly selling off everything that we own, like $5 at a time. But, you know, if I were not as finely attuned to the situation as I am, that might be my guess. Here's Don Taylor.
An Indianapolis police officer was nursing a back injury Saturday after breaking up a fake fight staged by a minister. Sergeant Matthew Grimes was invited to lecture a class on how to deal with the police when a fight broke out between two men at the back of his audience at a youth symposium last week. The officer was thrown to the ground when he tried to intervene. Only after Grimes drew his taser did someone tell him that the altercation was staged. The officer suffered severe back spasms and was taken to a hospital. Reverend James Harrington of Mount Vernon Missionary Baptist Church allegedly set up the scenario to test a white officer's reaction to a fight between two black men and defended his decision to do so.
Jesus, God.
We're trying to do anything we can to save the lives of our children, he said. We have to have live demonstrations of violence carried on by professional actors who are trained to do what they do. Meanwhile, Public Safety Director Dr. Frank Straub voiced his outrage over the incident, which police are still investigating. People are testing an officer with a loaded gun, with a taser, with pepper spray, with a baton, he said. I think that's totally stupid, to be perfectly honest with you. He could have a back problem that lasts the rest of his career. Willard Gupton, the park manager at the site, had prior knowledge of Harrington's plan and was suspended.
Jesus, God. From the first few sentences there, I really honestly didn't expect it to end that way. That took a hairpin turn about three paragraphs in. Hey, let me ask you this, Anna Griffin of the Oregonian. I have a question about tasing, because tasing holds a particular fascination for us here on the show. First of all, would you agree that we live in a golden age of taser use by police officers?
Oh, these are the salad days for taser users, yes.
I mean, it's one of those things that it seems like at some point it's going to have to be... It seems like we're missing a bit of regulation with tasing because, A, they just... It's like your first day at the academy. They just, like, hand it to you along with, like, assigning you a coat peg or whatever. And also, there seems to be a wide disparity from one taser to the next. Because they're tasing guys, in, you know, like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times, and then they get up and they, you know, they continue to cause mayhem or whatever.
I think some of it has to do with maybe how stoned you are, or maybe how drunk you are, maybe how out of control you are, and how large you are, and whether you need Novocaine when you get dental work done. It's better than shooting people, right?
I guess. It's just one of those things where you would think that a taser that has, you know, like whatever, 250,000 volts, you hit a guy with that and he would fall over and probably not get up again. So, you know.
And ostensibly, police officers are trained in tasers and tased themselves mm-hmm. as part of the training so they know what it feels like.
Is that true or is that a thing that that they just say?
I believe that's true. I think they have to be, most departments, you're tased and pepper sprayed.
Do they have, so the Portland Police Department, do they have lots of sort of non-lethal weapons or is it just... Was it here that they hit a guy with beanbags the other day?
No. Was that here?
Well, they had the beanbag shotgun.
Where they gave the beanbag. Okay, yeah. So the beanbag shotgun.
And which sounds a lot nicer than it is. I mean, those are very hard shotgun pellets in a bag.
I was actually going to ask you what those are, because we had this whole discussion here. I couldn't figure out what they were, if it was just filled with bunnies and rainbows or if it was filled with like pieces of lead or something.
And now we have the kiss gun.
What is a beanbag shotgun? I mean, what's actually in those things?
It's metal pellets in a bag, in a cushioned bag.
And it's I don't know, it's about how big, would you say? I mean, is it, in other words, is it like a regular size shotgun?
All I've seen is, my only experience is seeing the video from last year when an officer tasered an admittedly quite large 12-year-old girl on a Max platform.
See, I must have missed this altogether. This must be a thing that I wouldn't even...
And it looks, it's similar in size to a shotgun, sort of a sawed-off shotgun.
And is that one of those things where you have to be, like, I wonder if you have to be specially trained to use that, or if, okay, so you've got, Don's actually got a picture of it right here. So it looks like, you know what it looks like? It looks like a miniature throw pillow. It looks...
Full of lead.
It's pink. It's pretty.
It's a, it looks like something on which my dog would lounge at home, except that they put it inside a shotgun shell and they aim it at 12-year-olds, if the situation absolutely requires it. So when you go out as a cop, if you're out on the street, are you armed with all of the various weapons, and then it's up to your individual judgment in the moment what you use? So, like, do you have the regular shotgun and, like, the beanbag shotgun and the taser and the whatever?
Well, you know, most police officers very rarely pull their guns because that really is weapon of last resort, despite what we might think, given recent history in Portland. They have, you know, you have a baton and you have pepper spray and you have a taser and you have your fist and I don't know what else they have, but they have, there are
stompy
a number
boots.
Of weapons. Stompy boots, exactly.
A withering stare. excoriating wit. We had this story just a couple of days ago that you are undoubtedly familiar with. That where the city is paying out, for that. You know, the death that happened a couple of years ago. And was it the family's like $700,000 or something that the family is getting from? And I forget the guy's name.
Chassis.
Where does that money come from? Is there an insurance policy that the city takes out, like in case the officers just beat a guy senseless in a stall somewhere?
The city gets sued all the time for you ran over my cat with your water truck. You were putting in a new sewer line and you ripped out my DirecTV satellite, whatever. The city gets sued all the time, and so they have a lot of insurance for things like that.
I'm not advocating. Rick Emerson, of course, would never condone this. This is not a thing I promote, endorse, encourage. It's not a thing that I'm suggesting is a good idea. You should not sue the city just for your own profit and amusement. But if someone were to do that in some parallel world where somebody were just to say, they got time to kill and rent to pay, and they decide just to take the city to court, does the city typically just – I mean, do they fight things like that, or do they just sort of figure it's the cost of doing business and they just kind of roll over on it?
They are probably faster to settle. I mean, my vast legal knowledge speaking here, they're probably faster to settle than your average private sector business would be, just because, it's taxpayer money when city lawyers go to work to fight something. But it's also really time-consuming to file a lawsuit. And so you have to give the city a certain amount of time's notice before you sue. So what you see a lot of times, people file what we call tort claims, which is notice to sue, and then they never follow up on it.
And so it's just where they just it, and that's where they just rattle in somebody's cage to see if the city will just preemptively say, like, how about we just give you a bag of money and you just go away.
It's kind of like the massive alligator. It's here's some bones. Please go away. Yeah,
that's and my wife and I were talking about this because it's one of those things where I lived in Salt Lake City for a long time before I moved, before I was here, with sort of a brief stop over in San Diego. And I've always identified myself as just being a big bleeding heart. And that was thrown into stark relief when I lived in Salt Lake. But, of course, then you come to Portland and you realize that no matter how big a liberal you might be, you come to Portland and this is suddenly you're just like in the middle of the bell curve.
You're wearing clothes. You're a moderate.
I mean, that's right. That's the thing. And so my wife and I will occasionally get into these kerfuffles, often about police use of force. Because I just cling to this belief that almost everybody you pass on the street probably deserves a beating for something or other, you know? I mean, just to some degree. So I tend to get – and plus, you just think about the last time you were in a Greyhound station or just riding the Max or just at a – you know, the last time you had to, stand in line at the DMV and the people you were surrounded by and just the overwhelming urge you had to beat them senseless yourself. I mean, for no reason other than impeding your progress in life. Dawn came in yesterday and was just like on fire. She was just apoplectic with rage about having to wait at the convenience store behind some people who were like doing their monthly shopping there. They were just getting everything their family needed. And then there was a guy like buying, like a money order with dimes or something. And that guy has no job, I think, because he's the same guy that blocks me every time I go to the convenience store. And so if you think about, you're a cop and you're not only just dealing with the public at large, but you're dealing, I would say, for the most part, with a certain slice of the public at large, which is the crime committing slice of the public. And I mean, this is why I would never become a cop. I would never make it past the psych screen, because the minute you gave me a gun, I'd use it. The minute you gave me a baton. You gave me anything that if you gave me one of those things they have in L.A. where it's like it's like a sound thing. You aim it at a guy and he just loses control of his bowels. I would turn that on the public immediately.
You are waving a Colt 45 bottle threateningly right now.
So you got to figure that the instant a cop, figures that he has just cause and provocation to do it, he's just going to unload.
Well, the thing most people forget is that we have cut and cut and cut our mental health system so much that police officers usually are first providers when it comes to mental health services. I mean, they do a lot of wellness checks and going and nudging the guy who may be homeless or may be dead,
right,
asleep on the waterfront. I mean, it is thankless work what they do. And so this rush to assume when a police officer uses deadly force or excessive force, what we think might be excessive force, it's unfortunate in that it sort of blinds us to the fact that those are sucky jobs. I mean, those are really hard jobs. They're doing the stuff the rest of us don't want to do.
Well, I mean, it is very much like being a sanitation guy, the garbage cans don't typically stab you, if you're a guy coming through my neighborhood.
Well, other thing that I think because people watch a lot of TV and they think they understand what cops do and how they operate by watching television. And the thing is that one thing that you don't ever, ever see on television is the adrenaline rush that comes with the fear and the excitement of actually having to confront a suspect in some situation and being in a potentially life or death situation. And when I lived in California, I lived in Hollywood, which was a fairly crime-rific
a rough and
sort of
tumble place.
And we actually, I had a chase going around our neighborhood where you had cars and police cars and stuff through the neighborhood and went past our house about 4 days. It ended up on the front lawn of the house next door to me. And the cops actually pulling the guy out of the car. And the thing is, this followed a high-speed chase through a residential neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And the cop was standing over the guy. He had him face down on the lawn, had his gun drawn and pointed the back of his head. And he was trembling. He had so much adrenaline just coursing through his body. He was shaking. And it's like, you don't really think about, because you watch Law and Order and you watch TV shows, and everyone is very calm and very in control on those TV shows. And you really think about what would your physical situation be like and your mental situation like, even if you were really, really highly trained, if you were in that situation, when you're in a situation where you knew this guy could have a gun, could possibly want to shoot you, and you've just been driving 80 miles an hour for like the last 10 minutes through a residential street, trying not to kill people while you're trying to catch this guy.
That's a thing I think about. By the way, can I just say this? That's a thing I think about all the time. Whenever I see cops doing a high-speed chase, or even just like, this is like an... And I live in a neighborhood that might be described as a trifle sketchy. And, and it's just... This is my neighborhood in a nutshell. So my mom was in town a few weeks ago. And so my mom, my mother, who's and all boys say this about all mothers, she's a saint. So we offered to say, well, you can sleep in our room. We'll sleep. And she's like, no, I wouldn't think of it. I'll sleep on the couch. And so my mom sleeps on the couch in the living room. And the living room it looks right out onto the sidewalk. And she was, long story short, she was talking about how she slept pretty well. You know, once she got used to the sound of, guys pushing shopping carts down the street by the house, and she said, so after like the fourth or fifth time, it didn't really bother me anymore. And that's, and that really is sort of my neighborhood, that you would have enough shopping carts go by that living next to a waterfall, you eventually just become used to it. So there is cops sort of whizzing through my neighborhood all the time, sometimes with the siren on, sometimes just a light, and you'll see the little flash reflecting on like a street sign or something, and then they go by. And it is astounding to me that we don't have more cops just inadvertently plowing down, families of five as they're trying to cross the street somewhere. I mean, it really is fairly amazing. Your thing about the cop, though, with the adrenaline, this was actually right before we came back on the air. This was like, I think, during the last month that we were on the beach, as they say in radio, when we were off the air. There was – and my street gets – and I don't know what kind of neighborhood you live in. I suspect it's like way better than mine just because the law of averages indicates it would almost have to be. I don't know if they've ever had your street blocked off. If the cops have ever
like a shooting or something,
yeah,
no,
or the sea, and that's a thing. That is the thing that happens. It seems like once a day in my neighborhood, where they'll just like they'll cordon off all of the exit points, and that's sort of unnerving because they won't typically tell you why, but you're aware that there's someone in there that they don't want to get out into the general populace.
You don't want to know about the serial killer on the loose, do you? Who go after radio personalities in particular?
No, you just feel like you're in some sort of a zombie film where there's a contagion in there that they don't want to spread, to like Bethany or something. So they had the streets all blocked off, and I was just thinking to myself, well, that's kind of odd. I didn't really think anything about it. Much like my mom didn't notice the shopping carts after a while. I thought, well, streets blocked off. What can you do? And I go out to walk my dogs later. And I take the dogs out, and I'm, standing on the sidewalk across the street, just sort of standing, and real silently, like I didn't even notice it because the lights were off, the headlights were off. I mean, the car was just glide, and the thing about cop cars is they glide just like a barracuda. I mean, you don't even really notice them until they sort of like pull up next to you. And I, in my younger days, when I was a scraggly-haired, wayward youth, often dressed in like a Slayer shirt, I would be walking along the street late at night on my way home from somewhere, and you wouldn't really notice it until you heard like this stealthy, cat-like idle of a cop car next to you, and you realize it had been sort of following you for a while. So I'm across the street walking the dogs, and I suddenly sense that there is a car, and I look over, and the cop car has pulled up. And I had a whole Twitter thing about this, which in retrospect is maybe a bad idea. But I was standing across the street with the dogs, and this cop car suddenly pulls up next to me, like maybe 2-3 feet away from me. I mean, they pulled up adjacent to the sidewalk, and the door opens, and a cop. I get kind of freaked out just thinking about this. And a cop steps out with what I believe was an AR-15, which is a huge. It looks like an M16. And he steps out of the car with a full-on, like, assault rifle in his arms. And at that moment, you just have all of these scenarios going through your head, like, a cop? Guy pretending to be a cop. Guy who was a cop but was relieved of his duties and is now looking to vent his rage on the rest of humanity. And I swear to God, and this is I put a Twitter thing up about this word for word. The cop steps – and this is at midnight probably, so it's pitch black outside. Cop steps out of the car – as close to me as I am to you right now, with an assault rifle. And he looks at me and he says, sir, you might want to go inside. And then he just stares at me. And I was like, done and done, man. And it's like walking to the house. And then I'm standing in my kitchen. Of course, it's like, what are you going to do then? What, am I just going to go back inside and watch football? I don't think so. Maybe I'll take a long nap when anything could happen. So I just go back into the house. And so then what am I doing? Then I become the Gladys Kravitz, where I'm just peering out, from the blinds, wondering what's going on in my neighborhood. And I'm looking out. And about 5 minutes later, I see the same cop with the same assault rifle creeping through the garden in front of my house. And it's like, then you're just thinking to yourself, what is going on? Like, why is there a cop with an assault rifle sort of sidling along the front of my home at night? And then, but then you realize, even if there's something untoward about it, what are you going to do? Am I going to call the cops about it? There really is nothing I can do at that point.
And I've been in a similar situation to that. And there was, I don't know if you had this happen too. There is that moment when you think, wow, maybe I shouldn't be sitting this close to the window.
That's my other thing. But you can't not look, right?
Yeah.
Like, you got to know what's going on.
But you suddenly realize it's like, you know, if shooting actually does occur, I'm like right here.
Yeah. And so then there was a knock at the door, and my dog just, started to go crazy or whatever. And I was just thinking, this is just going to end so badly. And I opened the door. And of course, my idiot dog, who I love, but he's like the size of a Kleenex box, and he thinks, of course, he owns everything everywhere. So I opened the door. He doesn't know it's a cop with a gun. So my dog immediately sort of like, not lunges, but I mean, runs up to the cop. And then I'm just having these horrible, having to explain to my wife, like, why were one dog lights suddenly at the house? And so the cop is in there, and I immediately put on like the non-threatening white guy voice. And I said, is there a problem, officer? Is there something I can help you with this evening? And he says, have you seen anybody walking around your neighborhood that shouldn't be here? And I said I don't really know. Can you be more specific? And he said, well, we're looking for an individual with a gun who apparently was threatening some people earlier, and we haven't been able to find anything. But you haven't seen anything, have you? And I said, no, I haven't. And I'm putting together in my head that this means that they haven't found whoever it was. And then eventually they just like packed up their stuff and they left, never having apprehended him. So you got to figure, if I'm inside the house behind a locked door, and the guy presumably with the gun isn't looking for me, and I'm all freaked out. How freaked out is the actual cop who's walking around in the dark looking for persons unknown holding a weapon of some kind? Just to bring this all back around, it's been a long conversation, but to bring this all back around to my wife and I having these kerfuffles, because my wife works with crazy people. She works in a psych ward, insert joke here. And so she deals with, the mental patients all the time. And she understands that a lot of them get kicked out on the street because of lack of funding and whatever. And when this guy ran out of, there was like a Macy's bathroom or something a while ago, where the guy ran out of the bathroom and he's like covered in blood and he's holding a box cutter, and the cops are like, bang, one dead guy. And I had no problem with that. Like, a guy runs at me with a knife, and that's a guy that I'll have no problem with that guy getting shot. Because the alternative is for him to keep getting closer and closer to me with the knife. And So it does not surprise me. It surprises me, frankly, that cops don't shoot more people because they are in that situation all the time.
I was hoping the story ended with him looking for a massive alligator.
No, no, sadly, it does not. We're here with Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. Before we do, we'll do a couple more stories. We'll do the taser watch.
That's a perfectly good segue to a taser watch.
I don't know what your schedule is. If you got a skedaddle, if you got to stay. Have you watching the new? Are you a Futurama fan?
Not really.
How is it possible that you're not a Futurama fan? Because you're it's the best way. You're a big nerd.
I am a big honking nerd. Yeah.
I mean, and so you're among your kind here. But it surprises me that you would not be a fan of that program.
When it was first on Fox, I watched it occasionally because it was on after The Simpsons. So I watched that. But I also don't watch that much TV these days. Two small children.
What are you watching right now? Because you got you and I have bonded early on. I think the first time you were on Outlook Portland, we bonded over a Buffy and The Wire.
Oh yeah.
Because I think we were both finishing up season 5 of The Wire, which was the newspaper season, so we had all that going on as well. What are you watching these days?
We are rewatching Arrested Development.
Excellent, good for you.
So funny,
now,
so funny.
Did you take a break from watching it to let it to cleanse your palate so the jokes would be new again?
Watched it when it first was on, and then when the DVDs first came out, got them for Christmaka. But so I haven't watched them in a couple of years, and I don't remember any of it. Especially the last two seasons, I remember absolutely none.
And that's the best way to watch that show. In fact, it's funny you say that because I am on sort of an Arrested Development fast right now, because we watched it when it launched from front to back, and then I think I watched part of the second season on DVD, and that was right around the time they were canceling the show and it was wrapping up the run. And I made the decision that I was going to wait like 2 years, and then I was going to watch the whole thing to try to replicate the first experience of it.
It's such a good show, and it's so well written. And the way they build jokes, they'll start setting up a joke 12 episodes in advance of when they actually nail it. And it's just – so we're watching it one or two episodes a night, and you really pick up on how well written it is and how many things are ingrained in the plot lines.
It's just a masterful show in terms of – and using humor that you would not think – a lot of times that the humor on Arrested Development is actually sufficiently crude that you would not think it would come across as smart and as funny as it does.
And kind of surprised they got it on the air. Stuff they probably couldn't get on the air now, even now, just a couple of years later.
There was, the one that always gets me is when the mother, whose name?
Lucille.
When Lucille is talking about, she's talking to Michael Bluth about the cabin, and it's they end up with the log cabin on the back of the truck, and it's like George Sr. is hiding in there or something, and there's some build-up to where, and it's one of those Three's Company things where he thinks they're talking about one thing and she thinks they're talking about something else, and she's referring to the cabin, and she says, why would anybody want to go inside that musty old claptrap? And there's just like the longest, most awkward pause, and he does that great – Jason Bateman does that furrowing of the brow. And they do the brilliant sort of Letterman humor on Arrested Development where they give you about 80% of the joke and they let you do the final 20% in your head, which is the best way for that.
By the way, I saw Scott Pilgrim last night, and the whole plot being that he gets involved with this woman and then has to battle her 7 evil exes. And the one ex who was a girl, because she says, I was in college, I was curious. the female of the 7 evil exes is played by Mae Whitman, who was Anne, Michael Jr.'s girlfriend on Arrested Development. So he actually has sort of a fight scene with Anne.
The thing about that show, though, is it is so ruined any of those actors for being in anything else. With the exception of, I guess Jeffrey Tambor, too, but I was going to say Jason Bateman, because what's her name? Aaliyah
Shawkat.
She was in, she's in The Runaways, where she literally has no lines, zero. She does not open her mouth once. She's just there lurking in the background. And I don't know whether that's because they found that it took people out of the movie or whatever, or because I heard something that maybe the character that she was playing, that the woman didn't give her likeness rights or whatever. But I was watching Justified. You've got me watching Justified. And the guy who plays Buster is on that show as like a guy who – he deals Hitler paintings. And it's a totally non-comedic role. He's an art dealer who specializes in paintings by Adolf Hitler. And it's – it's one of the things where you try to separate the guy from the from the role, and it's just difficult to do.
Aaliyah Shawkat was in Whip It, which is actually a pretty good movie, and she plays Ellen Page's best friend.
Is that the Drew Barrymore?
Yeah, the roller derby, which is actually a pretty darn good movie. But yeah, she has a much bigger role, but still, it's still hard. You still can't help it. You think Arrested Development.
Let's do this. We'll go back to the news desk. We'll do a couple stories. We'll do the top five, and then we will bring a curtain down on this whole affair. Before we do that, Anna Griffin, what is coming up in the Oregonian that people ought to know about, be reading, and be interested in?
Probably more non-news in the Kyron Horman saga. I'm writing about the Tea Party for Saturday.
What is Please to Explain?
Please to Explain. I'm doing a conversation with one of the founders of the Oregon Tea Party, and not defending the Tea Party, but making the point that many of the people involved in the Tea Party are actually more reasonable than you think they are.
Is that true?
He does not have horns.
He
did not foam at the mouth in the time that I talked to him.
Does he? Without giving it all away, because of course this is pretty people shouldn't give it away. Make them pay for it. Without kind of just spilling everything, what is, if he's not crazy, what is his justification for being in the Tea Party? What is his reasoning?
Well, I think his reasoning, and again, you're going to need to buy the Oregonian and read it on Saturday, Rick. I think he worries about the national debt, and he worries about the size of our federal government, and he worries about whether his kids are going to own anything when they grow up, which I think is actually, if you look at our economy, is not an unreasonable concern. But I think those of us of a more liberal persuasion have different solutions to that problem.
I noticed a little bit, and this is the thing that Republicans are really good at, by the way. This is Republicans, the reason Republicans continue in an overarching sense to be victorious where Democrats cannot is that Republicans just don't. First of all, they just don't care. They just don't. They will go right for your knees. It doesn't matter. They don't have any. They don't have any sort of ideological constraints. They don't have any sort of. I mean, it is a zero sum game
to
Republicans.
They're not nice. They don't want to be nice. They don't care about niceness.
That's that they care about winning. They are. It's like, you know, they're very much like the Tom Landry of political parties, where it doesn't, whatever they have to do, you know, and that's the only sports analogy you're going to hear me make all week, by the way. Pat Buchanan said this great thing one time. He said, you know, Pat Buchanan's so great because he's, you know, just as horrible as he is in many ways, he's just so honest and upfront about it. He's a political realist, and you always know where he stands on things. And he said, what is all, in his sort of scraping the side of the house voice, he said, what is all this nonsense about political unity? And he said, we don't want unity. He's like, an election is about dividing the house. He said, you divide the house and you want the larger section of the house on your side. And anybody who says they want to, unify, that is just lying to you. And that's the thing about Republicans. But they are also exceptionally skilled in the manipulation of language in a way that Democrats just aren't. Democrats only use language to, like, denude things and to surgically extract humor and then destroy it, whereas Republicans do it in a way that is that advances their cause. And the thing, and this all ties into the Tea Party thing, because have you noticed this business that the Tea Party, they've done this retconning of the phrase Tea Party, where they are now doing this backronym where they claim that it stands for Taxed Enough Already. Which it clearly doesn't, right? It was clearly like an allusion to the original Boston Tea Party. But they realized, I think, at some point just how ludicrous that sounded. And
we're getting history completely wrong.
Yeah. And just like what a false comparison it was. And so somebody somewhere sat down in a room and they just had a dry erase board and they brainstormed a bunch of things and to think, no, taxed enough already. And then they just sent it out. And they beamed it like into Michelle Malkin and, into her head. And she went on television. She said it. And then suddenly everybody knows it. And it's great because it's like the Republicans are sort of I was going to say they're Borg-like, but they're not even Borg-like. The Republicans are sort of like – it's like they all operate off that resurrection ship in Battlestar where, when they get defeated, they go back to the ship and they download again and they come back stronger, and that they have evolved a sort of internal circuitry that circumvents whatever it was that defeated them last time, and then they plunge on ahead.
And liberals are so apologetic about being liberal. What is wrong with calling yourself a liberal? What is, the progressive nonsense? No, you're a liberal.
Well, it's
I'm a liberal. Let's be liberals together.
Well, it's because Republicans have demonized the word. It's because they've done it just like they have taken the – It just as Pat Riley owns three-peat, Republicans own freedom, liberty, family.
Yes, and Newt Gingrich made liberal a dirty word.
Yeah. So, hey, you know, that guy keeps bumping his gums about – are you a political junkie, would you say?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, see? Now, see, now we have even more reason to have you back on the show. We'll have headphones that work for everybody next time, too.
I appreciate you not telling anyone that I stole Don's headphones when I walked in here.
Nah, it's fine. Well, here's the thing is that once we're done with this, Don is going to steal my headphones. And then I swear to God, I'm going to use an electric green set of like iPod headphones for the top five segment. So just don't pay that. No, never mind when it happens.
I have little red ones. I guess I could have used.
You could use actually put those in there. I want us to be able to do the top five. This is what gives us our scrappy underdog appeal, though. You know, the fact that
Rick, let's put on a show.
You're actually speaking through a piece of cheesecloth, and Dawn is using $4 headphones. Right? That's.
Hey, these are $20 headphones. I bought these for my husband when I bought him an iPod for Christmas.
Kids, that's where your 32 cents a day is going right now. Well, if you are a political junkie, we'll have to have you. Presuming you are not just out and out horrified to your core by this radio program, you back.
It's a little bit like a Xanax high. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it's you'll find that I will say this. You'll find that this program, if nothing else, is a cocoon shielding you from the normalcy and level-headedness that you might encounter the rest of the day. All right. We'll do this. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Let's do that taser watch, shall we?
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, here is your taser watch brought to you by mugshotlist.com. That is mugshotlist.com. Don't forget that mugshotlist.com is updated 24 hours a day by a legion of robots. It's run by a listener and local entrepreneur named Andy. Covers 19 counties in Oregon, 13 states including Florida, Georgia, Texas, and Ohio. Always adding more counties and states. If someone is arrested, their mugshot goes up within mere hours. And then it's removed when they are inevitably found guilty of the crime of which they are accused. So here's your taser watch for Thursday, brought to you by mugshotlist.com. Here is Don Taylor with your Taser Watch for Thursday.
Derek Smith, a, quote, rather large, heavy man, unquote, filed a lawsuit Wednesday against the village of Riverdale, Illinois, and four police officers. He claims tasered him because he was too big to fit into the back of a police car. Smith claimed this happened on August 6, 2009, outside his South Suburban home. The suit claims Riverdale officers Martin Golden, Detective Graziano.
Riverdale officers? Were they tasing him outside of Pop's Chocolate Shop?
Riverdale, Illinois. That's where this happened.
That's fantastic. I had no idea there was a place called, like, an actual Riverdale.
The suit claims that the officers responded to Smith's home in Riverdale, and Smith and his wife, Doreen, told the officers that everything was fine. Police still took Smith into custody, and his wife told officers he suffered multiple medical illnesses, including congestive heart failure and irregular heartbeat and hypertension that required medication. The suit claims the officers then paraded the handcuffed Smith in front of his neighbors and to the police car. The rather large, heavy man could not physically fit through the police car's door, so the officers tried to force his body through the doorway. When they were unable to force him into the back seat, the officers tasered him numerous times in the chest, arms, thighs, back, and buttock. Smith, unarmed and in handcuffs, was never combative and attempted to cooperate until he fell to the ground from the tasering.
What do you suppose the logic was behind tasing it? Was it just sort of like so they could more easily stuff him into the back of the car? Is that the logic?
I think it's just more of this interesting phenomenon we're seeing where cops are using tasers like cattle prods, basically.
Here's a question. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, you might know this. Are there rules of engagement for a cop? Obviously, there are for a gun. Like, you got to feel your life is threatened to draw a gun, I would imagine. Or you got to feel like you are in imminent danger of being harmed. I wonder, are there rules of engagement for using a taser?
If not for police officers, then for Japanese conductors of bullet trains, sure, where they have to shove people in. There are standards for when you should use your taser and when you probably shouldn't use your taser. So that's weird.
So you're just not allowed to just be sort of, well, I had the urge. You know, and you just take it out and you just give a guy what for with it?
The guy buying the money order with dimes at... The convenience store.
I wonder sometimes if it's one of those things where the like when some guy will create a designer drug and it's so new that there is no law that makes it illegal. So part of me wonders if maybe like a taser, if it somehow falls between the cracks, legally speaking, and there is no and there are no strictures upon its use. They really was is my question. Well, I don't know. Well,
I personally think because there have been a lot of I've been searching for taser stories for Taser Watch.
Is it one of your Google alerts?
It is one of my Google alerts.
Well done.
I've been reading a lot of these stories.
Fantastic.
And use of tasers is up like enormously.
Well, because
in metropolitan areas.
But it probably is because I would imagine it's up because probably because of lawsuits, though, because you're much less likely to kill a guy and therefore to have his family like taking $1 million out of the city.
But the problem being, of course, that it's a non-lethal weapon, but it still causes damage. So and I, you know, I'm not honestly, I, you know, every single situation is different. But it seems that a lot of police officers in a lot of in a lot of cities are using them for crowd control. They're using them to make suspects behave.
You think
they're
I'm
not
a,
using them because they have to use them.
You think I'm a caveman, don't you? Admit it. You can tell me. You think that I have an overweening desire to see police inflict pain on people.
I think no, not police particularly. I think you just like to see people inflicted have pain inflicted upon them.
I'm a fan of entropy. I mean, what am I going to say? I like discord and strife.
Yeah.
It's just more, you know, it's more interesting. You know, and plus, and I'm not excluding myself from this. I'm just saying. You know, you just the odds, you know, like one in two that probably, you know, if you pick somebody in the street, they deserve something bad. You know, almost everyone does.
There's a big controversy right now that they're talking in Alaska where they're having to talk to park officials and to officers about not tasing bears because apparently there have been a number of incidents where people are using tasers to chase off bears. The problem being, of course, that this could just enrage them further, and then they'll just be angrier when they come to the next people the road.
But that's great because that's like a self-remedying problem, though. That's like a self-cleaning oven. You know, if you taunt the bear one too many times, guess what? You don't get to grow up to have taunting kids of your own.
Don't you think you tase a bear, you kind of get what you deserve?
That's why you're here, Anna Griffin. You're good people.
But again, though, what they're finding, though, is that they don't know what the actual effect is on the bear, and they're worried that what happens is you tase, I guess if you pepper spray a bear, the bear just goes, ah, my eyes, and runs off. If you tase a bear, yeah, the bear runs off. But now the bear is really, really angry. So what happens is the next home it comes across, like say maybe your home, Mr. Rick Emerson, the bear is like already angry when he gets there.
Okay, so this is
and
like,
that's not your fault.
This is like when you have a bad day at the office and you come home and you know the television flickers and you kick it real strongly and the television didn't do anything wrong. The television's just trying to amuse you, but it's the recipient of your misdirected rage.
Exactly.
All right.
Only the recipient is you, and you in this story. Is a bear.
You have to ruin all my fun. All right, there you go. There's your Taser Watch brought to you by mugshotlist.com. Adding more countries and more counties and states, serving Oregon, 13 states including Florida, Georgia, Texas, and Ohio. It's mugshotlist.com, sponsors of today's Taser Watch. Indeed. All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program, and thank you for joining us and so forth. Don't forget this program is available via iTunes later on today. Also, in archived form at rickemerson.com. Anna Griffin for the Oregonian. You want to stick around for our top five, and then we'll free you to go do whatever it is you do. I'm sorry, that's me. My microphone is turned off there. For you to go cover the ongoing collapse and decay of Western society as only you can.
I'm going to see if I can find a story that combines cannibals and tasering.
I'm telling you right now, you do that, you got like an 80 share of our audience right there. That's real quickly, actually, before we roll the top five, I wanted to ask you something. We didn't get to this on Outlook Portland the other day, but I know that you've written a lot about this, sort of this ongoing drama with the new police chief. And is that I have no idea how that process works. Is that a thing where, like, an appointment has to be confirmed by some, you know, the city council, or if it's just like a flat out appointment where one guy, like the mayor, just says it's you?
It's the mayor's job to name, and usually he likes to have the council backing him on that. And then you serve at the pleasure of the mayor, and he can fire you. And
it seems like one of those things that if the city council, because I know there's sections of the community that are not necessarily happy. With how this sort of thing turns out. So I guess my question is, if you're on the city council, why would they sort of passively sign off or tacitly sign off or even directly on somebody that they know is going to bring them, you know, on a choice that they know is going to bring them, you know, a fair amount of grief from certain sections of the community?
Well, I think the challenge is that pretty much any selection you make is going to bring you grief from some segment of the community. And the guy who just got the job, Mike Reese, is very popular among the business community and is very popular among other officers and has some friends on the city council and has done a lot of work. He used to be the head of Central Precinct, so he's well known among people who deal with mental health issues and homelessness issues, and they think he's a very reasonable guy. And so, you know, there are leaders in the African American community who wish there had been more of an open, lengthy public process considering multiple candidates for the job. The mayor fired Chief Rosie Sizer, and that same day named Chief Reese her replacement, so there was no lengthy process. But that is the mayor's purview if that's what he chooses to do.
See, and this is the other, this is like I was saying that I can't be a cop because I would tase people, and that it's good that I'm not a professional actor because I would just immediately become like a raging dick about everything. That's also why I can't be an elected official because I would abuse my power on day one. I mean, it would be cronyism the likes of which you would never see again. I mean, it would be off the charts. All right, without further ado, let's roll today's top five, ladies
five,
and gentlefolk.
Fire.
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, brought to you by such folks as The Cleaning Solution in the person of Michael Beatty. He can be reached at 971-533-3211. Talk a bit more about him here in just a few. How old is your son? I always forget.
7 and a half.
So you are no longer... Are you still subjected to... I shouldn't even say subjected. Is Sesame Street a thing that is viewed in your home?
I have a 3-year-old daughter, so there's plenty of Elmo in my house these days.
That's exactly what I was going to say. At what point did this sort of the Elmo event horizon envelop us as a society? That seemed to be a thing that we all just woke up one day and Elmo had replaced everybody else in the hearts of children.
I don't know when that. It's a little bit like the crazy wingnuts taking over the Tea Party, isn't it? I mean, it's at some point you look up and you've been hijacked by crazy little furry red guy.
And they've also
speaks nonsense.
It's just very weird. And they've also done this like Natalie Cole thing of going back and laying Elmo's voice over a bunch of the classic Sesame Street tracks from my childhood. And so it's like, oh, I listen for like C is for Cookie or something. And it's like you get halfway through the second stanza and then it's like, there's Elmo.
It's like when Hayden Christensen appears at the end of Return of the Jedi.
It's exactly like that. That's what I'm saying. Hey,
so now, did the Elmo popularity on Sesame Street, did this follow the popularity of the Tickle Me Elmo doll, or did the Tickle Me Elmo doll, was this produced because of Elmo popularity?
I don't know. That's actually a really good question. See, I don't have any children, so I don't. It's a thing I viewed from afar. I don't have any.
It's horrifying.
I have no knowledge of that. Hey, you know, here's a question. So, at the end of Jedi, see, and I or at the end of. Yeah, so now I can't even remember. Is it at the end of Jedi when they stuck Hayden Christensen in it? But they're not showing Ewan McGregor, right? They're showing Alec Guinness.
That's right.
So why is it that everybody else is old except that they're showing Hayden Christensen?
Should I get in? I mean, who knows what goes on in George Lucas's head? But and with the caveat that replacing the Yub Yub song at the end, okay, I don't have a warm place in my heart for the Yub Yub song, but I think, if you wanted to get all literary criticism about it, it's that Anakin stopped being Anakin when he still looked like Hayden Christensen.
All right, okay. So his transformation into Darth Vader happened at a relatively young age, and so therefore, so Anakin, you know, died.
It is the most criminal of retcons. It's horrible.
All right, okay. I can get you in the alteration of the song. But I remember just sitting there in the theater, and it's one of those things that everybody just sort of and people sort of like had heard about. You know, like many of the other changes.
But you didn't believe he'd actually have the nerve to do it.
Yeah, and you were just thinking, man, if you want to amuse yourself, go back and read like an archived message board thread, like on Ain't It Cool or something, from when Phantom Menace came out, or from when the re-release of New Hope came out, and specifically about the Han, you know, the Han shooting first thing. Go back and read threads about that, and you will see threads that would be. That would be amusing if they were not so heartbreakingly sad about fanboys debating with each other and trying to convince one another that really they did see it incorrectly in the theater, that it was like a skipped frame
he
or something.
He didn't do it.
Yeah.
He didn't do it.
All right.
In my house, we do not acknowledge that Phantom Menace exists.
Good for you. Well done. Now, is it you just start right off with Sith, or you just keep it to the original three?
We keep it to the original three. I have told my son that when he turns 18 and leaves my house— he may watch those movies, but until then, it's not going to happen.
All right. I feel exactly the same way, much in the same way as far as I'm concerned. There is only one Matrix movie.
Yeah, no, I can get with that. Final Star Wars question before we get to the top five. Is there any, because maybe I just missed it, is there any explanation given at any point for how it is that R2-D2 can suddenly fly, or rather could fly in the past but then can't in the future?
We all get slower when we age. No.
That's one of those things where not even the people at Lucasfilm felt that they needed to jam an explanation.
And nobody bothered to say, hey, George, we have this thing that's not quite consistent.
It's not quite working. You might want to do this differently. All right. This is your top five for Thursday. These are the top five songs from
October 20th, 1973.
And this top five was chosen at random, by the way. Sometimes we'll do theme top fives or top five, top five best this or loudest that or whatever. This was chosen solely to take the terrible taste of another top five off our collective palates. So rank was the music. So Don Taylor, let's count down our top five.
Now, are we beginning with number six?
We'll begin with the honorable mention.
Number six, honorable mention, Isley Brothers' That Lady, Part One.
Excellent. Which is something I hadn't... I think the last time I heard this song... Well, the last time I heard this, it was probably in Paul's Boutique, where it gets sampled. I think on the B-Boy Bouillabaisse song or whatever. But I don't think I've actually heard this song for 15 years. I mean, in terms of sitting around and listening to it. See, if I heard that sound on an Emerson, Lake and Palmer record, I'd think it was irritating, but they sort of make it work. This is an Anchorman, though, isn't it?
Yes.
They play this when Veronica Corningstone gets out of the cab. Wow.
This song just is the early 70s, isn't it?
It really is. I should point out, by the way, that I was like less than one at this age. So
you may have been conceived to the song.
No, see, don't say that. That's a horrible thing to do. Damn you! Here's why you're going to fit in perfectly. Because a long tradition on the Rick Emerson Show is that when it's someone's birthday, we will actually count down the top five songs from 9 months earlier to try to figure out what their parents were like humping it out to. So, yeah, it's...
So that whenever you hear that song in the future, you will involuntarily twitch.
Yeah, it's like you think of your parents, you know, slowly like caressing one another to do the hustle, you know, or just something horrifying. This, on the other hand, is awesome. Wow, there's like a little Wachika in the background.
You said that this was randomly chosen, but I was sitting here flipping through the book for about 10 minutes before I found. I found a Billboard list that I could actually stand.
Here's the other thing about this song is there appear to be no actual lyrics other than "Who's That Lady?" It's just sort of...
You can look, but you better not touch.
In this song, as in life, Don. Wow. Awesome. These are the top five songs from October 20th, 1973. Don Taylor?
Number five, Gladys Knight and the Pips, Midnight Train to Georgia.
Well chosen. Are you doing a...
Too much for the man.
Wow.
So he's leaving the life.
Okay.
He's come to know. Ooh.
He said he's going.
He said he's going back to
It's one of those songs that you hear it so often you forget how good it is.
Yeah. I just think I haven't... I don't know when the last time I sat down and, you know... And actively listened to the song was. Because, again, it's one of those things you burn out on it. And you know what? I did this a while back with it was something by the Eagles. It was like Take It to the Limit or something. Dawn is over there just lip-syncing every word. And I listened to it and I thought, my God, what a great song. And so is this. And, you know, and it has that warm analog sound. I feel like I'm in a Rob Reiner film where you're like in the kitchen with a bunch of other white women singing into a ladle, you know? Except it would be like you and one of your daughters and your mom. And you would be making some sort of sumptuous ethnic dish.
But is one of them dying of cancer?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the other one's getting a divorce and one's pregnant. When I lived in Utah, Gladys Knight is Mormon, and so she's huge in Utah. Gladys Knight stuff is all over the radio, because it's like anybody they can claim as one of their own, they just play it to death. So any Mormon celebrity, performer, singer, whatever, however bigger or not big they may be at that point in time in the rest of the world, they're always huge in Utah, like Merlin Olsen, for example. Wow, what a great song. And it's got that thing, which probably isn't true, but that thing that it sounds like they're almost all in one room. Yeah, kind of like a like Muscle Shoals thing, or that Otis Redding sound where they're all like in one big studio. The problem is now, though, I just hear the song and I immediately picture it being used in like an Ally McBeal episode or something.
You should think about the 30 Rock, the end of the 30 Rock where Kenneth was leaving and they...
It is...
Cleanse your palate a little bit.
Excellent. These are the top five songs from October 20th, 1973. Don Taylor?
Number four, Marvin Gaye, Let's Get It On.
I hate this song. I hate this song.
Because you were conceived to it?
Thank you. Thank you for mentioning that again. I appreciate that.
You know, and that would be appropriate.
I should.
Can you imagine
say,
your father saying to your mother, "Honey, let's get it on"?
No, I cannot. But thank you. Thank you for putting that image in my head, where it will linger forevermore.
We'll name him Rick.
Richard.
Die, all of you. It's wrong to say that I hate this song. I don't. I'm not like a huge fan of the song. I think because at heart, I have this sort of. I forget who used this phrase, but it was a sort of a rebellious nature, but sort of intertwined. It's woven together like hairs in a braid with a sort of deep conservatism in some ways. By which I mean that I'm kind of a prude, because you'll note that actually even now on the Intertron, you know, we don't use profanity because I can't abide it. And so I think this song just makes me uncomfortable.
So songs about sex, you just don't... rules out a lot.
It's not even songs about sex. It's literally that he's just...
Let's have sex.
Let's get it on.
I love this song because of Jack Black singing at the end of High Fidelity.
Why did they make that change? Because, you know, in the book he's singing Twist and Shout, I think. I think it's something much more innocuous and...
Probably because of being able to get the rights
to
it.
Well, maybe to getting a
also,
Beatles song.
Probably also, something Jack Black could... do a good job on it.
And
well.
If you didn't know Jack Black from Tenacious D, it was very surprising.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, it's a fine song. There's nothing wrong with the song itself. I think that... here's the thing. I think that in my head, I always you know, I always picture myself as the gangly, bespectacled youth. I mean, not that much about that has changed. You know, and you're sort of, you see yourself approaching the sweet young lass, you know, in the high school hallway and saying, so the spring formal's coming up. I was wondering if you'd like to go. Maybe we could go to Sherry's after to get some pie, you know, or whatever. You know, but you like to think that you're, you know, you like to think that you're one of your older, more, you know, more successful with the ladies' role models. Maybe a David Lee Roth, say, or a Steven Tyler. But then, you know, you try to picture yourself being a Marvin Gaye, and in no universe can I picture myself making this line work when speaking to anyone.
No one can.
I could be talking to someone in a coma, and this wouldn't work for me.
I recorded Sexual Healing, too, which
See,
is
See, but
creepy.
That's what I was going to say, is that's the song I just can't, absolutely cannot get
It's
with.
Uncomfortable, that song.
The Sexual Healing. That's the one that really...
you wonder how they can play it on the radio.
And that song always makes me giggle, because I remember I saw the comedian Kevin Meaney in concert once, and he sang that song.
Well, and that song. Sexual Healing also implies you've had some sort of sexual injury, and so that's the
yeah,
other thing.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm sorry, Doctor. We're going to need sexual healing over here in the, you know, in Ward 5. There's been an unpleasant breakage, you know, and then it's just...
Well, that's sounds daggering.
It follows naturally on Let's Get It On. You get it on, and then you need sexual healing. Well,
only after having relations with Marvin Gaye. He's that much man. Well, this has all gotten very weird. You're listening to the Top 5 from... October 20th. Do you see in the myriad ways in which this is different from Outlook Portland? That at least tries to pretend that it's a public affairs program. These are the top five songs from October 20th, 1973. Don Taylor, what might the next item be?
Number 3, the Allman Brothers Band, Ramblin' Man.
At the risk of repeating myself, boy, I don't like this song either. I think this is solely because I worked in classic rock radio. And so there's any number of songs that I never need to hear again. And the Allman Brothers created a great number of
them. It's such a cheerful song.
I guess. It's like 15 minutes long, though. It just goes on and on. I mean, the Allman Brothers are like one step away from being a jam band. And that's just, there's no call for that. I mean, there's nothing wrong
now
with it, I guess.
Those are guys that I wonder, no matter how deeply talented they may or may not have been, these are guys that you look at and you go... Would they actually be able to get a record contract today?
You mean because they look homeless?
Yeah, because they look like creepy, meth-addicted homeless guys.
Yeah. Well, the 70s were... I think that you could, up through the 80s, I think you could be, at the very least, odd-looking and probably still make, you know, get yourself a career in music. You know, it was the last refuge, like radio. It was the last refuge of the ugly. You know, when I was coming up in radio, there was no internet, obviously, and you didn't do a lot of public appearances. And when you did, somebody inevitably said, with a poorly hidden trace of disappointment in their voice, "Oh, you don't look like you sound." You know, but it's like maybe sometimes your photo was available, you know, in the lobby or something. But that's only if you were a pretty person. But now, you know, you have to at least. You know, you have to try to make yourself presentable to work, and I think any form of the electronic media, and I think music is no exception to that. You know, you look at a guy like, we talked about Phil Collins, but I mean, you look at a guy like Steven Tyler. I mean, Steven Tyler looks like a lab experiment.
Are you talking about your new American Idol judge?
Yeah, is that now?
He's
that official? Is that official?
No, none of the stuff's official.
Has Ellen? Did she say why she's leaving?
I think she said that because she doesn't like having to be mean to people.
She said she found criticizing people difficult.
Aw. Yeah. See, now I just want to hug her.
She got fired. Come on.
But the fact that she actually would put it that way, as opposed to going out there and just being all spiky about it, and just as opposed to sowing, sowing discord by being bitter or spiteful. If she, even if it's not true, which it probably isn't, that she put it that way is another reason why people dig her. Because she's just... You just want to hug her and give her some soup, you know, and then just like cuddle under a blanket and watch the Waltons. Maybe that's just me. Let's forget I said that whole thing. These are the Allman Brothers right here with Ramblin' Man. Yeah. All right. These are the top five songs from 1973, October 20th to be exact. On Taylor.
Number 2. Cher, Half Breed.
So I got to tell you, it was difficult to track this song down.
Really?
Yeah, it was. She does not embrace electronic distribution of her music via legal or other means. So I had to root around on my own in my personal song collection at home, where it was hidden way, way, way in the back. My father married
up your Cherokee. Just awesome.
It's fantastic.
This is great.
We will not appreciate Cher and her awesomeness until she does.
Man, it's...
just the whole package, when you stop and think about everything she's done. Mm-hmm. And how fantastically over-the-top all of it has been.
How I love to hate that word. It's awesome. I have a live performance of this song at home somewhere, which is she does this and Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves in a sort of like master mix. It was like a live at somewhere. And she just sells it too. That's the thing. And it's such a ludicrous song. You know, I mean, it's just no one else could make this work. I can't think of anybody that could get up on stage with a straight face and perform this with like a full-throated sincerity the way that Cher does. Come on. Wow. See, it's one of those things where we just, it's like a commentary where you just hear them, they get quiet and they're just watching the movie. Now we're just listening to how awesome Cher is. Boy, I was watching, what did I see the other day? It was, I don't know, some damn VH1 program. But they were doing a thing about Sonny and Cher, and they were showing the Sonny and Cher program. And it's like, you know, everybody jokes about how she doesn't age and she looks the same as she used to and whatever. If you go back and you look at those those old Sonny and Cher programs she did, and she was just stunning.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just scorchingly gorgeous. I mean, jaw-droppingly beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, she's still a very attractive woman. But she was, like, had otherworldly beauty. I wonder if that's the thing where Sonny Bono just woke up every day and just thanked his lucky stars. He just, you know...
Well, probably when he wasn't, like, psychologically abusing her.
Yeah, I think to get a woman like that, if you look like he did, that you have to have a confidence that tells you you deserve that.
Because he's, like, 2 feet tall and you know, and looks like Geppetto. And so, you know, he just... And what were you saying? You're saying they had some sort of were you saying that he was an unkind husband?
No, I think what I heard, he was one of those sort of cocky little men. And
it's hard to imagine Sonny Bono abusing anybody.
Well, and he was a good, like, 15 years older than she was, too. And I think there was an element of that sort of trying to keep her self-confidence in check so that she wouldn't leave him.
Oh, so the Porter Wagner kind of Dolly Parton syndrome?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I could listen to this all day. I could just put this on a loop and then shame myself and my family by driving down the street with my windows down all the way. And the other thing that she gets away with it by having like the most cliched, stereotypical like Indian drum, you know, thing going in the background. I mean, all right. Well, in any event, it's like one step above Indian Giver by the 1910 Fruit Gum Company. All right. These are the top five songs from October 20th, which is apparently a glorious time in music history. October 20th, 1973. Don Taylor?
Number one, The Rolling Stones, Angie.
There you go. I was going to ask him anything he'd be better than Half-Breed, but I mean, you know. Wow, what a great song this is. There's a great version of this on their live. The Stones typically put out terrible live albums, but they put out a fantastic live record called Stripped in about 1995 that is all just sound checks and rehearsals at little clubs in Europe.
Angel, when will those clouds all disappear? Angel.
Hey, I have a question for you guys. I don't know if we're all Stones fans in the room here.
Yeah, sure. I was just sitting here thinking, just if, you know, you have those moments when you think how awesome it would be to be a person in a particular period of time.
Yeah.
Like, I always think, man, if I could be, I want to be Emma Thompson while she was still married to Kenneth Branagh. You know, that kind of thing.
It's like, okay.
To be Angela Bowie, you know, in 1973.
I was thinking about this song makes me think of Wild Horses, and I was thinking about that line in Wild Horses, the "Let's do some living after we die." What the hell does that mean?
I don't know.
All right. Oh, never mind. God, what a great song.
It would be pretty awesome to be David Bowie in 1973. Yeah.
I'm sensing a theme with your observations.
It would be awesome to be David Bowie in any time in
the
history.
Yeah, that's true. There's never really been a bad period for David Bowie.
And plus, you'd be immortal, apparently. Mm-hmm. And an elven king. It's so weird when you listen to the Stones now, like you listen to some of their recent stuff, which is, you know, not terrible. But it's the problem with Stones records, you know, the thing about bands getting older, it's not even the band guys aging, it's the singer. It's always the singer that's the weak link, because the singers, to have any sort of impact, they have to have a certain amount of histrionic to their performance, and that's the thing you can't sustain after 20 or 30 years. I've seen the Who, it's that way with the Who, it was that way with Motley Crue when I saw them last year, it's that way with the Stones, where musically, you know, especially with the Stones, where it's not like they're like some speed metal band, where they gotta like be athletic as such to do these performances. I mean, you know, you can play this when you're 70 years of age. It's Mick Jagger who has just become the sum total of his cliched mannerisms.
You fall back on shtick because the voice isn't there anymore.
Right.
And you know what people expect to see, so you have to give it to them.
So he's out there and he's doing his pursed lips and whatever. And he just becomes Jimmy Fallon as Mick Jagger in Almost Famous. But you listen back to this and you just think, you know, just how unbelievably, amazingly good, the Stones were when they were great.
I'm also just fascinated by this entire phenomenon of rock and roll guys writing songs about the wives of other rock and roll guys.
Layla.
That they're in love with. Yeah.
We should do a top five songs written about some other dude's wife. Ugh. Excellent. Wow. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. Your Tea Party article comes up this Saturday.
Saturday is Oregonian.
This Saturday. Well, I appreciate you coming in and spending some time with us.
It was fun and weird. It was fun.
This is mostly weird. That's fine. This is, like I said, when Donna talked about this earlier, and she said, do we have something planned out, a topic she'll be discussing? And I said, I think we'll just kind of throw her into the deep end and just have her just be witness to our juvenile insanity. And then if she ever comes back, then we'll know that she can kind of handle anything. Because this show has flat out horrified some people over the years who visited once. And then it's like when a girl says, no, I'll call you. And then she's burning your number and blocking you, you know, on the subway.
And that has literally happened with a couple of your female guests, I recall.
Let's be fair, not just female guests.
I'm just thinking of one in particular who...
I don't remember her name.
Actually, I believe it was one of the people who stood in for Tim Riley when he was...
What was that girl's name? She wrote for Portland Monthly. I don't even remember.
Yeah.
If anybody remembers, don't tell me. It's because I've clearly erased that section of my memory.
Yeah, that was one of those things. I was actually listening to that show, and you could just hear
it.
You could hear it coming through the radio that she was just like, "I don't want to be here.
She
I should
despised
never
me.
Have come here. I hate all of you."
When our news director Tim Riley was laid off at the end of 2008, we did this thing. And this is no one who can, you know, Tim is irreplaceable, for a lot of reasons, we decided the thing to do, and it was right when the recession was kicking into high gear, so we did this thing where we had a series of other laid-off media people rotate as fill-ins for him. So we had Heidi Tauber, who had just been laid off by Air America, and then actually Todd Tulsis, who had just been laid off as being Tom Hartman's voice guy, came and sat in the studio with us.
David Walker did it, because he'd been he'd left Willamette Week.
Byron Beck, because he'd just been fired by Willamette Week. Ketzel Levine, who had been fired from NPR, and that was just like an exercise in insanity, just having Ketzel Levine and I in the same studio, where she kept looking at me like I was some kind of insect that wasn't threatening as such, but that was just sort of odd in a way she'd never experienced before. And then we had some woman whose name escapes me, who wrote for the Portland Monthly, who I think had been told by a friend of hers that it would be like a swell time if she came out of the show. And we got about 5 minutes into the show, and it was like she was giving me a look that was the temperature of liquid helium.
What did you say?
I don't remember.
Stacey Wilson.
Everybody heard you say that. You know, you're behind a microphone. Stacey Wilson, apparently, was her name. Just in case you missed that when Dawn said it out loud just
Stacey,
now.
Stacey, we'll talk later.
Do you know Stacey Wilson by chance?
No.
All right, because that was one of those things where as soon as it came out of Dawn's mouth, I was thinking, I wonder if she's a friend of Anna's or something.
We like to hang out in the kitchen, dancing to the Pips.
She seemed like a fine person. I mean, up until the point where she hated me. And even then, she didn't seem like a bad person. I don't remember what I did that was so off-putting. I honestly don't. I have no recollection of what I did, because I'm not overtly horrible or I'm not some pig DJ idiot for the most part.
It just sounded like she was expecting something, I don't know, perhaps a bit more highbrow.
That maybe, or I might have, you know, I have been told that occasionally my language can be a little brusque and unfiltered in a way that perhaps some people, maybe at the Portland Monthly, you know, where they walk on gossamer carpet, you know, and, you know, life is just like one big James Thurber drawing. Maybe I was I was uncouth in some way, or I said chick or something. I've heard that rubs people the wrong way sometimes. What are you going to do? So at one point I asked her during the show, about 20 minutes in, 25, I said, are you enjoying being here? And she just said, no, I'm really not. And then she went back to reading news in this clipped, terse, unlikable voice. And I swear to God, we'll end the show here because Anna was probably – Cheryl probably told you you'd be here for 15 minutes, and you've been here for like an hour and a half.
I didn't even ask.
This is
my mistake.
The Stern method of just keeping people in the studio until they forget where they are and they just say things they shouldn't.
That's why you put the headphones on them, because then they feel tethered and they can't leave.
So I really do apologize. And just for future reference, you can just leave whenever you like.
This was fun, though.
You're welcome to stay. You're welcome to go. I always feel bad because people just like, they look and they're like, look, I should have been back at work like 3 hours ago. My final thing about Stacey Wilson is that she did this whole show, and I think we let her go early. I think we feigned that the show was ending after an hour, and it was a 4-hour show. And we're like, well, after, you know, we're going to wrap it up. We're going to go home. We're ending the show, which airs from noon to 1 every day. Stacey Wilson, thanks. Goodbye. And then she left. And that was the end of that. It's like we had this other person who I won't name who came in to fill in for Tim at one point and who just broke down crying about something else altogether, I think. I hope. But she just broke down crying 20 minutes into the show, and Sarah and I just looked at each other with sort of awkward kind of, let's just go to a long commercial break and shoo her away. But so we end the show, and Stacey Wilson, I don't think she said goodbye. I think she just like clamped her purse shut and left. And, you know, and then so that was all bad. And then so you fast forward to the Coraline premiere, which happened, I think, at the Schnitzer or something. And, you know, which they did here because of Leica Studios or whatever. And so there's the whole, like, rope thing at the inside where you stand and you wait for, like, pointy Terry Hatcher to walk by so you can say, my God, you look sickly. And so I'm standing there, and it's like they've got your names written on little index cards taped to the floor so you know where you're supposed to stand. And so it says, you know, like Sean Levy and whoever and blah, 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 Rick Emerson and blah, blah, blah. And then literally right next to me, it says Stacey Wilson. And it was like that thing where I looked and I go, Stacey, what? Oh, God, no. And then it just became like a ticking clock, you know, where I'm wondering at what point she's going to show up. And then so she appeared like 5 minutes later, like Beetlejuice, standing next to me. And then it was that like horrible, awkward, uncomfortable, icy silence as we're standing next to each other for like half an hour, you know, as like Dakota Fanning or somebody walks by. Me pretending I didn't see her and her pretending she didn't see me, and just the most like cringe-inducing like vacuum of emotion between us as we were standing there at the rope line. So there you go, and that's the end. So, and I had suppressed that entire thing until you mentioned her name just now.
So he didn't remember her name, but he has this entire saga about her now.
Well, my brain is a series of sort of hidden hyperlinks that I will forget all about something until like earlier today when you mentioned that thing about buttocks, and then suddenly. You don't want to know. Seriously, you don't want to know. You in no way do you want to know what we're talking about. And in fact, we deliberately...
Which we had to get out of the way before our classy guest arrived.
We deliberately structured today's show so that the buttock conversation would not happen with you in the room.
I have to listen now.
No, please don't. I beg of you.
I told the cannibal story while she was here.
I said, like, she works for a newspaper. It's a classy joint. We can't. We have to talk about it now before she gets here. She only knows me for the TV show where I wear a suit. So, you know. And here's the.
And yes, you fooled her.
The improbable thing is that, like, I know we're out striking out on our own now as an independent venture for which people inexplicably pay. But you realize that five different major media companies in Portland alone have hired me. Now, they've all fired me, to be fair. But they've hired me at one point, like CBS, the Columbia Broadcast, the network of Edward R. Murrow. Looked at me, they said, that Rick Emerson, let's hire him
to
broadcast.
Suit. You wear the suit convincingly.
All right. We should end. Anna's never going to speak to us again. She's just sitting over there just loathing the day that she answered the phone, ruining the moment she returned Cheryl's email. All right. So forth. Let's just end this whole thing now. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided to you by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. We want to thank our guest Anna Griffin, who can be read in print in the Oregonian online at OregonLive.com, and who, presuming that she blocks this entire incident out of her mind, will be joining us again at some point in the future. The Rick Emerson Show, made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Thursday, August 9th, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. See you all tomorrow. Be safe. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.